You know, you burn a question mark in his yard.
I'll tell you what, Gene, if you want to hang on into Bob's show, that's fine. Technically, this is the end of my show, but we're going to continue this right after the break. I just want to say thank you to everyone for listening to the Inside Scoop. If you're listening on the archive, check out Bob Kincaid's archive following, because this discussion is continuing right after this.
Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And we are continuing the debate and discussion. I think discussion is a far better word than debate. That was begun on Mark Levine's Radio Inside Scoop in the previous hour. Mark will be with us for the remainder of this hour, as will you with your calls to 877-443-2366. That's 877-4, Head On. Or if you've got a long-distance calling plan that doesn't make it hurt for you, it's 304-658-5453. Welcome back, Mark.
Good to be back.
Oh, this is too, this is too much fun.
I'm on the receiving end now of the questions.
Well, exactly. I think what we should probably do is let's go back to... is Gene still with us? Let's go back and get Gene's thoughts.
Yeah, don't have Michelle and Jennifer. I want to give them a chance, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I just want to say this. The religions that you cited, Mark, on Buddhism and Quakerism and the like, those are all reactions to an Orthodox religion, and therefore... I can accept those, and that's the only decent thing I can think of as far as religion is a sense of community, whereas the doctrine stuff, no thank you. and with that, I'll
but see that I'll but leave. I'm gonna agree with you. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
No, okay, I was gonna say, no, I mean, but that sense of community, you're right, and it's not to be knocked. I mean, look, I'm not disagreeing with any of the stuff that Bob is talking about or Dave is talking about the horrors of religion, but I'm a little afraid of to use another phrase, throwing the baby out with the bathwater, because there are many different kinds of religion. They're not all fundamentalist. I could argue and agree that all fundamentalist religion is bad, because to me, the definition of a fundamentalist religion is a religion that says we have the entire truth. And the one thing of which I'm absolutely 100% certain is you can't be absolutely 100% certain of anything and know that's not a contradiction. So I hate all the fundies, whether they're Jews or Christians or Muslims or anyone else. But there's all kinds of religion out there that does allow for questioning, and hopefully we'll get into this some this hour when Bob asked about my religious upbringing. But I was taught to question. I was taught to challenge. I was taught to, if the rabbi tells you something, you ask him why. I mean, two Jews have three opinions is what I was taught. So there is a role for skepticism in religion, and I don't want to throw it all away because I've learned a lot, at least from my own religious upbringing. And so sometimes I feel like religion has done so much bad to so many people that they throw it all out. I hear this in the gay community all the time. You know, I grew up and I was persecuted, and so I hate all religion. And I completely identify and sympathize and empathize with the people who've been persecuted based on religion. I mean, we all have been, probably all of us have been. And yet, well, at the same time, I don't want to throw it all away. Go ahead, Gene.
Well, it's just that religion, I mean, whenever you talk about something that's purely imaginary, it's not too hard to slip into that rigid, dogmatic thinking, and I'm not so sure. To me, that's an awful high price, and I'm not sure that I want to. I mean,
I'm not saying you should accept religion. I'm not trying to convert you. I'm not saying that you should accept. I'm just saying that I don't want you to condemn all religion at all times. I want it to be a little more nuanced. That's all I'm asking for, Gene.
Well, I've been following the development in the atheist community of their secular group, so that's kind of fun. But I'll let somebody else on here. Have a nice day. Bye.
Thank you, Gene. And Mark, I love that line about, you know, two Jews have three opinions.
You should see what six Jews have. It's a committee and it's ugly.
with six, you get matzo ball.
It's like 1,000. I mean, it goes up exponentially. And the worst part is we all talk at the same time.
Oh, believe
luckily,
me,
we can hear three conversations.
It's a lesson I'm learning with you. but you point towards something, and I find this. I think it's almost provable empirically. The older a religion is, the more likely it is to be more rational, if you can say that any religion is rational. Buddhism predates Christianity. It's very rational. The Jews have been working at it for a long, long time.
The Egyptians predate the Jews, and their religion isn't too rational. So,
there are elements of Judaism that are a reflection of Egyptian religion.
That's true too.
Picked up during the bondage.
That's true too.
But it's more rational now. If, for instance, and this is the best example, if you take the Roman Catholic Church right now, and move it back to the year 1300. All right. You have bloodthirsty killing, no good to be said for it practically at all. Well, now take the violence of Muslim fundamentalism. And what you've got is you're looking at Christianity at 1400 years, and you're looking at Islam at 1400 years.
Yeah, Judaism wasn't too pretty at 1,400 years either.
No,
actually. That was when we had the Jewish state, and we were forcibly converting Edomites. We haven't done that in about 2,000 years, but
you got over it.
We got persecuted. When you don't have power, you can't abuse it. It's that simple.
Well, there's truth in that too. Let's go to the phones and Jennifer. Hey, Jennifer, welcome aboard.
Hi there.
How are you?
Hey, Jennifer, are you a first time caller?
I'm good. No. I'm having a little trouble hearing you. Can you hear me okay?
We've got you just fine, Jennifer.
Fine.
Okay, good. Well, I want to agree with you, Bob, on some things, and I want to agree with Mark about some things. I don't think all religion is necessarily bad, but I will say this, and this is my issue. If someone tells me they're a Christian, the red flag goes up. I'm sorry, I just don't trust them.
How about the Unitarians?
Christians.
Can you trust them, Jennifer? How about the liberal? I mean, Martin Luther King was a Christian.
Who?
Martin Luther King was a Christian, and there's the Unitarians. They're liberal Christians. I mean, you can throw all Christians in the same basket.
Church. And I'm also a Buddhist. I've been a Buddhist for 30 years, and I want you to know that there are national Buddhists. But what I like about Buddhism is this. No one tells me what I can and cannot do. What they do tell me is, whatever you do, you're making a cause, and you will get an effect. And if you're willing to get the effect, go for it. You know? And I do believe that there's...
It's called karma, right? That's karma, basically? What you put out comes back to you?
It's an oversimplification of karma, yes.
Okay, I'll take the oversimplification, because that's all I know.
But it's what most Westerners understand, is, you know, cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes a lot of sense to me. And I do not believe, however, that people need to be taught to be good. I think they are good. I think they're born with everything they need to have a wonderful, meaningful, and a compassionate life. And I don't think you can teach compassion. You either have
you don't
it or
think you
don't.
Can teach compassion? Really? I think you can.
Oh, I don't.
You don't think
you
can
so.
Teach compassion? You think
I
you're
think
born
it's
with
something.
It?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you think it's genetic. You're born with either a compassionate nature or a non-compassionate nature.
I think that it's part of childhood development.
So you can teach it.
Born with the capacity for it, but not everyone develops it. And it's not a learning process necessarily. You know, I've always had it. My mother used to get so annoyed with me because she's the underdog person. You know, I was always saving somebody or some animal, you know.
I think that's
and
wonderful.
I still do. I've got a house full of rescued animals.
I think that's a wonderful thing. And, you know, they say that killers, to do the reverse, generally kill animals before they kill humans.
I know. And when I was a little kid, so, I used to go around saving all these little strays and drove my mother crazy. And then I got to the point in my teens where I was saving stray people, you know.
Yeah. You can take that too far, though.
I know, you can. I learned that.
Yeah, I mean, you can save so many people until you don't save yourself,
but
and
you
they
know,
start using you.
Right. Granted,
the rule is you cannot give somebody something you don't have.
but if you think back on it, Mark, from your own tradition, and granted she was more or less of a child when she wrote this, But I think one of the best expressions of what Jennifer's talking about comes from the diary of Anne Frank.
Yeah, she still believes people are good.
I still believe that people are basically good.
Yeah. I believe that people are neither good nor evil. I certainly don't believe in original sin that people are evil. But I don't believe people are good either. I think you see from toddlers... You see compassionate behavior and you see selfish behavior. And that's why I think it's part of the role of society to teach compassion. So I'm not going to say, I mean, I agree you can be genetically in one direction or another, but I actually think that a lot of it can be taught and should be taught. So I don't give up on that.
Behavior is better taught, Mark. It's not compassion, it's behavior. You can teach people to behave any way you want them to.
You don't think there's a point where you got a 2-year-old that becomes a 4-year-old where you tell the child at age 2, share your toys because that kid wants a chance to play too, and at 2 they don't get it because it's like, no, my toy. But at 4, they can put the child can put herself in another child's shoes and say, oh, well, I would want the toy too. I'll give her a turn.
That's why I say it's a matter of childhood development and behaviors that are being taught throughout that development. But the capacity to be good and kind and compassionate is there, whether or not you develop it. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
I understand what you're getting at. I think I truly do. And thank you very kindly, Jennifer.
Thank you, Jennifer.
I'm enjoying the show very much.
Oh, good. Well, you know, we might start doing this kind of thing more often, just like super
friends.
Yeah,
we really should. Bob and I, we work well off each other.
When I can get a word in.
Thank you for doing it.
No, it's been fun. And thank you, Jennifer.
Bye.
And let's keep this going and go to Michelle. Hey, Michelle, welcome aboard.
Hey, you guys. Well, I kind of missed out on a little bit of the conversation. But I go back to Mark's hour, because that's what motivated me to call before. I was just sitting in the chat room, and then you guys had to... Well, it was Mark, you know, debating. Can you hear me, Mark, by the way?
I hear you fine. I'm listening fine. Michelle's one of my long-term listeners. She's been around for years, and I'm always listening to you, Michelle. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm out here to torment you. That's my job.
No. I love when you call in. Go for it. Take me
anyway,
on.
Anyway, but what I was going to bring up was, you know, when you were talking about what religion has done for people and that it's good, I mean, I understand what you're saying, not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. But I look at my own daughter, who's 13, and you know, of course, we all love our children, but I'm still shocked, I mean, every day about who she is. And I'll tell you, I knew and like 24 hours her birth that she was a good individual. I knew it. I mean, and it's It's not a man-made religion, and we are the guardians of these children, and we need to be able to take them into the world and help them to navigate the world and navigate people in a kind way and in a respectful way. And my daughter does that without an influence of religion. I mean, the poor girl at fifth grade told her classmates that she didn't believe in God, and she was like, I said, don't do that in Orange County, baby.
Oh, Lord.
you might be thrown away.
It's a dangerous thing to do. But, Michelle, let me be clear. You can absolutely raise a compassionate, caring, human-centered, kind child without religion. I am not at all saying that religion is necessary for that. I know many people who are raised as atheists and are wonderful people. I'm not saying that. I'm really looking more historically, and I tend to look at things through the eyes of history. It's my favorite discipline, and I love history. And I'm looking at sort of the development of culture and humanity. And, you know, I am proud of my own religion. It has its faults, no question about it. Bob's raised a number of them today, and they're fair. They're perfectly fair. I'm not knocking those. But yeah. I do think there are good things that can come with the idea of one God, the idea that we are all brothers and sisters, right, and we all have to care about each other. You know, God created us all in his image. You don't have to take that literally to understand, right, or to believe that if we're all, you know, Cain shouldn't kill Abel because we're all in God's image. I mean, there are good lessons in the Bible, you know, love thy neighbor as thyself, that people strive to live toward. And I just don't want to knock it all.
Well, and I have to point out, if we do take it literally that we're all made in God's image, then, you know, for sure God's gay, because God has to have both sexes. Otherwise, we all wouldn't be here.
Right.
That's true.
The women
can't argue
and
with
the
it.
Men. So that's my perspective on that one. But I understand what you're saying. I guess what dumbfounds me and what I see prevalent in, maybe it's just right now in our society in America, because they, you know, these greedy people have figured out, you know, they've paid lots of money to people to get in these think tanks, and how can we get into the society and divide them? And what have they done? They, like you, love history, love psychology, love philosophy, have gone in, and of course, like the Greeks, you know, they had time because they had a lot of money to sit and plan this out, plan this divide. And that happened, you know, I think that's happened religiously because those are the people in historically that have been in control. I mean, if you think about the different times.
Well, and sure, and religion's been used as a way to control people, too, no question
right,
about it.
Right. Well, in England, you know, they have the Church of England, and they justified a lot of things using that. And you know, I guess what I so, you know, I think it hurts a lot of us just in talking with people in the chat room, listening to Bob, listening to you. I think we all could probably say what hurts is to see such a divide, an intolerance that we have for one another. And I guess that I kind of heard that was what you were saying in the baby with the bathwater.
Well, part of my concern is that there are good people, I think, and I think we all think, that, you know, that they go to church every week, but don't mean any harm, actually do look out for their neighbor, actually do give charity, actually aren't prejudiced based on their religion. And I think sometimes there's such a reaction on the left to the certain evils that religion has done that it makes us not be willing to see our fellow human beings who happen to believe in religion, too. And I guess that's what I'm trying to convey. I'm trying to be compassionate to them, too.
I don't know. I like, you know, I'm an activist, and I've been involved in a lot of events, invited to events where the religious community gets together, all religious communities, the Catholic, the Jewish community, the the Islamic community. I mean, they get together. I remember in L.A. they had a big function, and I went to it. And, you know, that's community. That is working together. That's not showing a prejudice towards any one, you know, belief system. And also there were, you know, atheists or agnostic like me, you know. I mean, that's true community in the sense I accept your beliefs as your own, but I don't say that, you know, I can't listen. I mean, I don't see a lot of liberalism in that. I see a lot of the old DCCC doing that. They've utilized that, but I just don't see the liberals are doing that.
Well, I think there are these coalitions that came in the civil rights movement. In fact, there was a very strong coalition across religious branches to do good. You see it in the environmental movement as well, and I think that's growing. Thanks for your call, Michelle. I always like when you call.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle. Mark, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is kind of complicated. I hope it makes a little bit of sense.
Okay.
I grew up, you know, watching the great Jewish comedians and you know, Woody Allen, and there's always reference to Jewish guilt.
Yeah.
Now, guilt is enforced on the Christian side of things by a sort of a mix of Santa Claus and Jesus when you're a kid.
Yeah.
You know,
enforced by our mothers.
Right. But what I'm getting, you know, it's you know, Santa won't bring you any toys, and you know, I've got a very, very dear friend who was raised as Catholic as you come, and he says, you know, he was told at one point, every time you mess up, every time you sin, you're driving another nail in Jesus. Will you quit hurting Jesus? You know, so I know where that guilt comes from on the Christian, but you know, it's enforced by your mother. But where does it come from? Epistemologically?
It comes from your mother. I mean, you know, there's the old difference. What's the difference between an Italian mother and a Jewish mother? An Italian mother says, if you don't eat everything on your plate, I'm going to kill you. And a Jewish mother says, if you don't eat everything on your plate, I'm going to kill myself.
It's going to kill me!
It's right. You know, how many Jewish mothers does it take to screw in a light bulb? None. I'll just sit in the dark.
Yeah.
It's you honor your parents. You recognize your parents. They gave you life. They gave you everything, and if they're feeling bad, you feel bad. It's certainly older than Judaism, but it's a very, very strong familial tie, a very strong.
But does that, at some point, does that guilt tie back to the Yahweh, whatever?
Nah.
He ain't worked up about it.
Well,
Mama's worked up about it.
You can certainly read Deuteronomy and the Shema and the Holiest Prayer, and it says, you know, you shall love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, all thy soul, and all thy might, and these words which I give you today shall be bound in. And if you do good things, then your fields will get lots of rain, and if you do bad things, then, you know, your sheep will die and you'll have drought. But it's interesting because these very ancient ideas, which are literally more than 3,000, 3,500 years old, were seen by later rabbis, and I say later, I still mean 2,000 years ago, but rabbis 1,000 years later after these things were written, as extremely simplistic ideas that are meant really to convince the masses to be good. It's sort of the old Santa Claus idea, you know, God's watching. And the beauty of the book of Job, which is also part of our Bible, is whoever wrote Job looks back on these simplistic ideas, looks back on them 1,500 years later and says, this is ridiculous. Good, bad things do happen to good people. We can't close our eyes and pretend that's not true. And sometimes the evil succeed. And so the book of Job was a Jewish philosopher, poet, to deal with that idea, the idea of how God allows evil in the world. And most scholars I know believe that the last, you know, six verses where, you know, Job gets three times his family back and four times his sheep back was an addition by some rabbi who couldn't handle, you know, a story with an unhappy ending.
In Hollywood parlance, it didn't test well with the focus group.
Exactly. So they added those last 10 verses, but virtually no one believes that was in the original text. And again, to me, the great beauty of religion, and I do know my religion better than others, is not that we have all the answers. We don't even come close to having all the answers, but we ask just about every great question. And to me, that's the important thing. And the other thing that I learned in Sunday school, The questions are more important than the answers. A really good question, that's why Jews are known to answer questions with questions, mm-hmm. because a really good question has far more value than any answer, because any answer by definition is incomplete. But a question can raise everything. And so, to me, yes, there is this idea of, yeah, do good and you get rewarded. And, you know, we even have it in the mezuzahs. It's there. But we understand from the beginning, or at least from 2,000 years ago, or plus, Job is older than that, 2,500 years ago, that even these simplistic ideas are to be challenged. And that, to me, is the joy of my religious upbringing, is that I think that my whole questioning, skeptical spirit was nurtured by my religion. And I'm very proud of that. We studied Christianity, we studied Islam, we studied our own religion, and we're told, in effect, never accept what anyone says without questioning. And so it's the joy of challenge, the joy of questioning. It is not to be taken as law. And that's, like I said, that's the joy of my own religious upbringing.
We need a Muslim in this discussion.
We do, and I'll have to bring one in, and we'll have another discussion someday.
Because, at one point, Islam had a very questioning spirit.
Parts of it did, no question.
And a lot of that has been beaten out of it.
That's true.
The Islam of the castles in Spain is not the Islam of Osama bin Laden. Or the Islam of Saudi Arabia. Because very few people know it, and if you ask Muslims about it, they won't give you a straight answer. I mean, because I know this by virtue of having done it, with scholars, and you ask them the straight answer. Where do most of the proselytizing materials and monies come from for Islam around the world? They come from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
Absolutely.
And it is a prop up for one of the most poisonous, virulent brands of Islam that exists, and that is Wahhabism.
That, no question about it.
So it makes the questioning is valid, and that's the and Christianity's fault is that it has always said that questioning is evil. Now, I'm proud of the fact that you and I are not sitting here debating the question of how many angels can dance on the head of a pin.
It's 42, Bob.
Oh yeah, well I know that too. but that's where the ritual I think is some of what drives me crazy. Because it seems to make an assumption that it's like somebody with obsessive compulsive disorder.
If I wash my
hands three times, it's okay, and then they can go out of the house after they've turned the light off twice and checked the lock on the door five times. It's an obsession, but it doesn't get you to heaven. It doesn't get you to paradise.
Let me defend some ritual.
Okay.
Some ritual. It can be overdone, like anything. I mean, I don't keep kosher. I do drive on the Sabbath. But there is meaning and power in ritual, and I want to give you one specific ritual that I happen to love from my own religion. Again, it's the one I know best, so
sure.
That's the one I keep quoting. That is the ritual when dealing with death. Under Jewish ritual, when someone dies, the first thing you do is you bury them as soon as possible. You can wait till all the relatives come in town, but it should be within like a couple days, very quick. You don't want body decomposing. You also have a closed casket because the corpse is allowed some dignity, and you don't want to be peeking in on that. The body is watched over all night long as
Shiva.
If not to be alone. Until by this group called the Chevra Kedisha, the Holy Friends that do this incredible task. It must be a very lonely job. But to me, the most beautiful part, there's a bunch of things that are ritual. You go to a cemetery, and when you come back after the funeral, the first thing you're supposed to do is eat an egg. That's kind of a strange ritual, but the idea is that after death, you have to think about life.
You have to acknowledge
the beginning
life.
Of life.
Yeah.
So acknowledging the whole cycle that with death, comes life. And you do wash your hands when you leave a cemetery to sort of ritually wash mm-hmm. away.
Well, there's
that
a lot
idea.
and there's a lot of ritual washing in Judaism, isn't there?
Yes, there is. But when you think about it, hey, we were clean during the Black Death, okay? All these Christians died because they weren't washing their hands.
And you're a desert people.
Well, and not only that, but the kosher laws. Listen, the pigs had all kinds of diseases that could kill you in those days. They didn't know how to treat. Now, any Orthodox Jew will tell you that's not the reason they keep kosher. They keep kosher because God told them to. But any scientist looking back on these practices can say, oh, well, these were evolutionary things that helped this people survive. But the thing I want to get to, though, the most beautiful thing, I think, It's a practice called sitting Shiva, which you may have heard of, some of our listeners may have heard of. When a Jewish person dies, there's Shiva means seven. It's Hebrew for seven. And you're supposed to take a week off. You sit for the week, and if it's your father or mother or spouse or, God forbid, son or daughter who's died, you stay at home, and all your neighbors come to you. They come to your home. They cover the mirrors because you're not supposed to care what you look like. And they cook for you. They bring you food. They clean your house. They take care of you. And for a week, you're supposed to focus on that death. You're supposed to take the time off to focus on it. Now, after the week, you're supposed
cry
to
cry your
back
eyes
to work.
Out, carry on. Yeah.
Yeah. And
get it all out of your system.
Well, because it shouldn't go on more than a week. If it goes on more than a week, then because there's a time for mourning. Yeah. And if you don't take that time, it's bad. But if you take too much time, it's not so good. And the other thing that's interesting, and this is a little more obscure, a lot of people don't know this. This is one of my favorite little rules. In sitting Shiva, in the first 3 days, and you're only supposed to talk about the departed when you sit Shiva. Don't talk about sports. Don't talk about the weather. In the first 3 days, if the mourner doesn't want to talk, you just sit next to them. You sit in silence. You hold their hand. You give them a hug. You feed them. Okay. After 3 days, if they still haven't broached the issue of the person who's died, you're supposed to broach it with them. And those next 4 days, actually discuss it. So you actually kind of force the person to deal with the death. Now, these are ritual notions, but they're humanistic notions. I think they are. This is
a humanistic
great
notions.
Idea.
This isn't that kind of ritual that I was talking about, where you turn three times, click your heels, and you're in contact with God.
Well, all right, even those. There's something, there's all kinds of that in Judaism. There's no question. You sing holy, 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 and you're supposed to lift up on your toes three times, getting closer to God. I don't know. Sometimes ritual can be comforting. It's a practice. You've seen your grandfather do it. You do it. You don't even have to believe it so much as it's sort of, it's just like seeing an old familiar face.
Yeah. I guess what I'm getting at is that if you acknowledge what it's doing for you, it's good. If, however, you think that God is paying special attention to you, and that if you actually do it four times instead of three, that he's going to go, oh, screw you, and with the lightning bolt, then you're missing the point.
I agree completely.
Okay, so you mentioned keeping, is it kosher or kosher?
In Hebrew, it would be kashrut. You can also say kosher as the adjective. The noun is kashrut. The adjective is kosher, and people just say kosher in English. So that's what I was saying.
You know, when given a choice, I buy Hebrew National hot dogs because God, they're wonderful.
They're probably cleaner than other hot dogs.
I would like to hope so. When I lived in Atlanta, we always got a kosher turkey at Thanksgiving because we knew it had been raised cleaner and killed cleaner. But some of these laws, though, you recognized a few minutes ago that later scholars said, you know, look, this was just for keeping society in hand. Yeah, shrimp? You can't have shrimp. Because
I love shrimp. Don't get me wrong.
Because
I eat shrimp all the time.
Because they're bottom feeders.
Right. Today we know how to clean them. At the time, it served a very important purpose.
Crabs? Unclean. Lobsters? Unclean. Well, okay, I'm down with that.
Catfish too.
That really sucks.
They're bottom feeders, but I don't keep it. But I respect it.
Okay, Agnes, I'm going to the phone in a second. I'm asking a question here. Okay. Why do you guys wind up with nothing but corned beef?
We and the Irish, right?
Yeah. And see, oddly enough, you mentioned the funeral ritual, and I'm familiar with the concept of sitting Shiva, and I'm also familiar with the idea of an Irish wake. I think we should combine the two, and everybody should get an Irish wake that lasts 7 days.
That'd be a lot of drinking, Bob.
Oh yeah, it would. Well, there's a great story. A lawyer from my hometown died, and he left outside of his will in a bank account that someone else had access to, so that it couldn't be closed off in the estate. Enough money to throw a humongous party. And he requested of everyone who came to the party, teetotalers, drinkers, whatever, he said, I want you to all get uproariously intoxicated. Because the next time that you feel awful, I want you to be able to say, I haven't felt, he said, I want you to all have just terrible hangovers. Because the next time you're feeling bad, I want you to look up and say, I haven't felt so bad since Bob Smith died. Gene is back with us for a minute. Hey, Gene.
Hey.
Hi, Gene.
Hi. A couple of real quick things. You've made a distinction here between religion or the community stuff that we all do, and then God. I suppose I can swallow the community-based stuff that makes sense. I mean, I can even see, in a modern sense, a good reason to keep kosher for shrimp because of all the mercury and stuff. But I haven't found a religion where the supplicant has rights against God, him, her, or itself. Because the thing that I find so frustrating is that people will come along and they'll say, well, God told me to do this, and therefore it's okay. Do you know of a religion that says, wait a minute, there are some rights that we have to, we have some rights.
Sure. Don't get me wrong. Judaism, as an ancient religion, has many contradictions, and the first thing you would probably mention would be Abraham sacrificing his son Isaac when told to by God, though we stopped at the last minute, and we can talk about that if you want. But there's another wonderful passage in Genesis where God is going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, and Abraham literally bargains with God. And Abraham says, well, wait, what if there's 50 righteous people? And God says, all right, if there's 50 righteous people, I won't destroy the city. But what if there's 40? All right,
well,
Abraham,
there's
40. What if there's 30? What if there's 20? And there's another passage that I can think of from the Talmud, which, of course, is written after the Bible, but still a couple thousand years old, where they're having this argument, and I don't even remember the technical argument, but there's this wonderful thing where the people say this, and God says, you can't do that, it's against the law. And the people say, but you said that the law is supposed to be humane. And God says, yeah, but the law is this. And they say, but you said da-da-da-da-da. And they prove to him, using the Bible, that God's law is wrong. And at that point, the Talmud says, God laughed harder than he'd ever laughed before. And the angels asked, why is he laughing? He said, my children have defeated me. My children have defeated me. So there is this idea, at least in Judaism, and it makes for a lot of Jewish lawyers, that using logic, using persuasion, yes, you can even defeat God. If you can out-argue God, then you don't have to follow God's law. Because there are higher principles that even God must follow.
But see, that goes back to the thing with Job, Mark.
Yes, because that's exactly what Job is.
Because Job takes a run at God.
Yes, he does.
And he asks God some very serious questions, and God just bitches him out.
Yes,
he doesn't
he's
give
no
him,
answers.
He doesn't have any answers.
True.
Job says, I followed you. I was your guy, and I've continued to be your guy. My wife over there, she says, curse God and die. I've had boils. I've sat in sackcloth and ashes. I've continued to worship you, and you keep crapping on me.
Right.
Why are you doing it? And God says, who are you to ask me?
Right. But when you think meta, when you meta think it, Bob, when you look beyond the text and think about what the author is saying, that in and of itself is a radical idea. Job isn't so much depicting God as depicting an idea of God that the author of Job is rejecting, as I see it. Rejecting the God in Job and saying, I can't believe in a God that treats law over goodness.
Well,
that to me is the meta moral of the story. That's how I read it.
But if you look at the majority of today's religions, and I think I can say that safely, that they tend to look, if they've got a holy text or holy writ, they go by the text. They don't go through there and test it out.
Gene. I think they change the text to suit their needs, much as people do the Constitution. If they want slavery, as Bob pointed out, they go to the text. If they don't want slavery, they go to the text.
It depends. I mean, the text gets changed to suit a certain portion of a society, not the entire society, in a lot of cases, I think.
Yeah, no, they do. I just think the more sophisticated religions and the more sophisticated teachings in all religions, whether it's liberal Christianity or liberal Islam or liberal Judaism, is to challenge the text, to take issue with the text, to reinterpret the text. And that some of the, that's why some of the best Jewish thought is in the Talmud, which is a commentary on a commentary of the text. And
well,
so,
Mark, just a minute, though. I think I understand some of what Gene is saying. And part of this is the fact that your faith has moved on, quite frankly, from its brutal beginnings. And it has questioned itself, and it's looked deep inside, and it's realized that some things that were very bad were done, you know, some very bad things were done, yada, 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 as we've discussed. But on the other hand, the fundamentalists of Christianity are going back, and it's as if all that thinking that the Jewish people have done over these millennia is for naught. Because, you know, as we've discussed, the Old Testament prophecy says, and speaking of the Messiah, and he shall be born of a young girl. Well, right. They screwed up the translation, and it comes out virgin. So now you've got millions of people venerating the Virgin Mary.
Right.
Okay, who wasn't. All right.
As some comedian once said, this is a woman who really stuck to her story.
Yeah. but there's other stuff out there, too. It's very clear. It says stone disobedient children. Well, I haven't heard any stoning stories coming out of Israel lately or out of, you know, Jewish neighborhoods in the United States.
No, they don't do that.
But you have Christian Reconstructionists who are actively, you know, and I mean, I'm not making this up. The guy says he wants to destroy the Constitution. There's thousands, if not millions, of these people, Mark. They want to destroy the Constitution. They want to set up a biblical theocracy, and the prescribed method of execution shall be stoning. Somebody asked him why, and he said, because God said it, and there's lots of rocks.
But, Bob, you're being too hard on your own religion, because, yes, some Christians teach this, but the great majority don't. And I think Christianity largely has moved on. I think most Christians have put aside millennia of anti-Semitism. Most Christians have put aside literal texts. Yes, the fundies are still out there, and they're still dangerous, but I don't think you're giving liberal Christians enough credit.
But the old Nazi anti-aircraft gunner who's running the Catholic Church now said the other day that he thinks it's crazy to say that evolution and God can't get along side by side, to which I say I agree. But then again, this is also a guy who believes when he eats a cracker, it turns into human flesh in his belly, and he believes that people will go to hell for putting a condom on in Africa. The good is outweighed by the bad so much that you can barely see the good. I'm sorry, Gene, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think you're both running away, because I'll be honest with you, Mark. I mean, we've pretty much said that Judaism has moved on, but if you look at the at the really Orthodox Jews,
I don't defend them. I don't defend fundamentalism of any faith, including my own. I don't defend the really Orthodox Jews.
I'm not saying that you do, but I guess the point I'm trying to make is maybe it doesn't matter how old the religion is. It more matters how powerful the adherents within the religion are. I mean,
and maybe what I would ask, I guess, everyone listening and Bob and everyone else, is instead of fulminating against religion, quote-unquote, how about fulminating against fundamentalist religion, quote-unquote? And then go after the Orthodox Jews and the Orthodox Christians and the Orthodox Muslims that say that there is no truth but my truth. And that's fine with me. I'm on your boat. I'm 100% with you there. But don't throw the liberal Christians and Jews and Muslims and Buddhists and Baha'i out with the fundamentalist backward. That's the heart of what I've been trying to say these last 2 hours.
But isn't it upon liberal Christians, Jews, and the rest to... It's their job to correct their religion.
Yes.
Isn't it?
It is.
Because I'll be honest, I'm not a Christian anymore. I refuse to go back.
And that's your choice.
I'm not
telling you to be a Christian. I'm just saying let your liberal Christian neighbor live and attack your fundamentalist Christian neighbor.
Well, fine. But, I mean, I just think that, you know, a liberal Christian will look at this and say, but these are, even though they're fundamentalists, they're fellow Christians. I can't hurt them.
Well, some fundamentalists, I mean, it's all a range here. I mean, some fundamentalists are worse than others. I mean, not all of them want to string everyone up into a tree like Bob's friends in Alabama.
They weren't my friends. Now stop it.
Okay, I'm sorry. Classmate.
Hey, guys, I got to interrupt here because Agnes has been sitting here just bouncing like a bead of water on a hot iron skillet.
Come on, Agnes, join us.
Go ahead. I'll get
Thank
back
you,
to
Gene,
you.
For
Take
your
care,
call.
Gene.
Okay,
bye now. All right, Agnes gets her word.
Oh, I get a word? Thank you, Master.
You get a soapbox. Go for it.
Thank you, Master. That's three. You're done.
Ah, yeah. Don't make me. You are in so much trouble. It's okay. History, excuse me, history is only as good as the man who writes the book, right?
True.
Okay, so you have books that have come through translation and different people and their perception. Well, to me, it looks as if whatever can get you through life, I don't care what it is, if it can get you through life and keep you from killing someone else and to have some human respect for your fellow man, that should be enough. It doesn't matter who you love. It doesn't matter what you wear. And it doesn't matter how much money you make. That's, to me, that's spiritualism. It's not about a certain religion that's better than another. Because we're all the same on the cellular level. And trying to pick and choose and who we're going to kill, who we're going to kill and who we're going to rule doesn't seem like any type of spiritual relation to me at all. I don't... It's like what you said, Mark. Questions are important. Questions open up far more than answers because I don't think any one answer is right. And if you have something that can get you up in the morning and keep you going to the next day and to the next day, and you look at somebody who's worse off than you and you say, well, you know, that could be me. Let me help you. I've been with people from birth to death. And honestly, I don't think the religion made any of those concepts any better. The child comes in, there's no religious belief. And when they go out, they're not really worried about God. It's like that they want to impart something to their family. And a lot of times family's not there. They're alone. So you become that family. And the things I've heard uttered didn't have God in them. It had to do with, you know, I wish I had done this. Or I wish I had been a better person. Some people go and they don't regret anything. But at the end, it comes out the same way. If something can keep you going and make you have faith for a better tomorrow, to me, that's what spirituality is. It's very easy to become embittered. I mean, my family was a hodgepodge of religion. And there wasn't one church that I went to. I went to a lot of different ones. And the same concept applied. No one played by the rules. They took the rules and they manipulated them to make their perception of them okay.
Yeah.
And you can't go to church on Sunday and confess for everything evil you did the entire week before and get absolution. The only absolution comes is from your own soul. And if you know you're doing wrong, you know, it's like I tell the children, sorry is good for me only one time. If you do it again, then I realize you weren't sorry in the first place. I look at my fellow human beings.
Oh, and
beings,
when she lays into that one, Mark?
Oh, yeah.
You want guilt?
Well,
okay, that's my Jewish side of the family.
Absolutely.
I have the matzo ball soup and look at them and go, see what you're doing to your mother? Look at this.
And the kid starts crying.
Yeah.
That's why you never need spanking in a Jewish home. It's look what you're doing to your mother and tears flow.
Do you know what I gave up to have you? I only wanted you, and now look at my life, and here you are. Look what you're doing to me.
Oh,
my
God.
Oh, no, but the good one is... I'm not angry at you. I'm disappointed.
Oh, yes.
Then the child goes out and hangs himself.
No. No, no, and it keeps them from hanging other children.
Yeah, you know, and that's 4 hours later. Daddy, why am I a bad person?
No, you quit. Because I look at them and I tell them, I know you are a good person. And would you want someone to treat you this way?
That's the right answer.
But I am to the point in my world, I have no cheeks left to turn. And if somebody is going to stick me with a sharp stick, you can just bet I'm going to get up on my soapbox and I'm going to let them have it. Don't bring Jesus into
should.
The fray.
Well, and that's actually one difference between Judaism and Christianity. That's an ancient difference that we can go. We can have a whole other show on this, Bob. But, you know, when do you turn the other cheek? And Jews think that if someone slaps you, you don't turn the other cheek. You just get persecuted that way. You got to slap them back.
And a lot of that is a misunderstanding of that whole passage, Mark.
Okay.
That's at the heart and soul of the nonviolence movement, among other things, because it's not about being meek. It's about enforcing the social dynamic that is going on between the slapper and the slappee. Because when you turn the other cheek, you're not saying "hit me again and put some stank on it." You're saying, "I'm better than you. I just won."
And
because
certainly
I just
Gandhi
drove,
and King yeah. showed us how to do that.
Yeah.
It depends, I think, on whether the person hitting you has a conscience or not. If the person hitting you has a conscience, then nonviolence works. If the person hitting you is out to kill you, nonviolence is not a good strategy,
and
no one taught us that more than Tibetan Buddhists, and they lost Tibet to the Chinese by being
nonviolent, unfortunately. But this stuff rises out of Roman Palestine at a time when Jewish zealots were cross-dressing as women and sneaking up and stabbing legionnaires. They were called the Sicarii.
Yes, they were.
And everybody was trying
they
to
wanted
figure,
independence.
Yeah, and they everybody was killing everybody. And so when Yeshua stands up and says this ain't working, then that is radicalism. That is the highest form of radicalism. In fact, there is some argument to be had for the fact that the vilification of the Pharisees that takes place in the New Testament is all the secondary hogwash.
Well, it all comes later. It all comes from John, which was written 100 years after the other Matthew, Mark, and Luke,
Yeshua had more in common with the Pharisees than he did with
he was a Pharisee.
Yeah, because he was a teacher. He was a
right.
he was a and that was the missionary aspect of Judaism of the day.
Let me just back up briefly because we don't have much time left and talk a little bit about what Agnes said, because I agree with everything she says. I think you don't need religion to be spiritual. I think that parents can teach and do teach right and wrong. And I think that, religion can get in the way of that. I also think, though, that sometimes in some families with some religions, it can serve as a guideline. It can help a parent who's having difficulty knowing how to teach. There are some wonderful principles there, like love thy neighbor as thyself. Frankly, one of the ones that's very much informed my life is the principle of tikkun olam, which is largely, I guess, explains why I'm, gave up my high-priced job as a trial lawyer to make nothing doing radio. But the idea that when God created the universe, God so filled the entire universe that there was no room for free will. God controlled everything, and that God withdrew a bit because you can't create a creature that loves you. You can't. You can force a robot to say, "I love you," but that's not real love. The only way you can be loved is if the person loving you has free will to accept you or reject you. So in order to give mankind free will, which man got by eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, woman too, is God had to withdraw a bit in order to give that space for mankind to have free will. And in that withdrawal, it was such an amazing thing for God to withdraw from the universe that it created shards, the universe broke into shards, these shards of light. And what tikkun olam is, it literally means repair of the world. It means that it's man's goal and woman's goal, it's mankind's goal, to stitch together the world, to work with principles of God, but to work among fellow human beings to repair the world, to make the world a better place. And you don't have to believe any of that literally. Not a word of it literally, to understand it as a great idea, a great motivation. The idea that we're not here on earth just to be born and eat and sleep and have sex and die, but to actually make our world a better place. And to me, that's just a fundamental principle. It's in my religion, but it's one that I think many, many people believe in. And it's informed for me, by my religion, and I think it's a beautiful concept, and I just wanted to throw that out before the program ended.
Well, and very well said indeed. I've got a note here from our good friend Cindy, who is in the northwest of the in the shadow of Mount St. Helens. She quotes Sam Harris, who is, I guess, the leading atheist of today, and he's written a brilliant, brilliant book called The End of Faith. And he writes, "Moderation in religion poses considerable dangers of its own." I think Cindy's paraphrasing him. "As the accommodation we have made to religious faith in our society now blinds us to the role that faith plays in perpetuating human conflict." And part and parcel of that, Mark, is where we stand in America. The discussion that we've had has been largely, I believe, enjoyable, first of all, but theoretical. And not too terribly practical, because the practical effect of religion in America today is pernicious. I think part of it has to do with its tax-free status and its exalted position within the First Amendment, because the First Amendment at this point, Mark, has been reduced to little more than a life support system for the religion industry. There's a new law taking effect in Texas that I'll talk about later in the program. As of September 1st, Texas is imposing a religious expression law that basically says that a fundamentalist, because this is who it was written for, a fundamentalist school student in a public high school can go about the school browbeating whomever he or she wants to about Christ Jesus, and the authorities can't do a damn thing about it.
Really? Stop conversion, proselytization in the schools. That's terrible.
This is to encourage proselytization in the school.
Well, I understand.
Yeah.
In other words, the schools can't stop it. Let me just say this, because I know we're running out of time. Largely these 2 hours, I have been defending religion, largely because I'm sort of taking a reaction in opposition to Bob. You should know, or your listeners should know, that I've spent my life defending the separation of church and state. In fact, probably the most important thing I did in my years on the Hill was more than anything else I did, I defeated George Bush's faith-based initiative. I'm very proud of that. And I sometime, if you want, call in on my show and I'll give you all the details. But this is the thing that I most have my fingerprints on. If you ask, what did Mark most do on the Hill? I did many, many things. But the thing I was most successful in was killing a statute that did the faith-based initiative. You put some in some executive orders, but those can be overturned by the next president. And I'm a firm believer in the separation of church and state. And I'm a firm believer, Bob, in that that's a bad law. And I am always quick to talk about the dangers fundamentalists pose in our society. I just want to be very, very clear where my standards lie. I just wanted to say that, remember that there are some benefits that I myself personally derive from my own religion, that others personally derive from their own religions. I would never seek to convert anyone. When people try to convert me, I generally just enjoy it and laugh about it, but I don't take it seriously. But at the end of the day, it's what Annie said. It's whatever moves you through the day. And if that crutch is Jesus or Muhammad or Moses or your own humanity or your own belief in humanity or your own belief in yourself or your mother or your children, keep that crutch. I'm not going to grab anyone's crutch, no matter what its name on it. As long as someone's not harming somebody else, and they want to believe that the moon is made of green cheese, and they don't want to teach it in the schools, but they just want to believe it, and that their God comes from there, and they're actually a good person, I don't want to take their religion away from them. That's their crutch.
But
let them have it.
Mark, we're running out of time. I got to finish this by saying, but the other side of this debate is that they want to take your crutch away. They do. And second,
yes, I know they do.
And secondly, they believe that their spirituality, if you can call it that, their religious insanity, which is what I call it, entitles them to dictate it to the rest of us.
You're right, they do.
Because they do want to teach that the moon is made of green cheese.
Yes,
and
they do.
And they want to run you the hell out of town if you say otherwise.
And I'm always going to fight that. And I get to close with one last story, and then you get the next 2 hours, Bob.
Okay.
One last story from my tradition. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was asked once, "Rabbi, if we are busy planting a tree, and they tell us the Messiah has come, what should we do?" And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, "If you're busy planting a tree and they tell you the Messiah has come, finish planting your tree and then go out to greet the Messiah." Whatever your views are about God or the Messiah, if he's there, he can wait. But your work here on earth That's more important. The Messiah may or may not be there. Finish planting your tree first.
Okay, last question for you because you've got to go.
Yeah.
Pre-Hellenic Jewry, post-Hellenic Jewry, does Reformed or Orthodox or whatever, within your the religious view, is there a heaven and is there a hell?
No. There's no hell. Heaven, the word in Hebrew for heaven is Olam Haba, which literally means the world to come, the earth to come. And so I've always translated that in my view, and again, two Jews have three opinions, but in my own view, it means that if we create heaven on earth, that's where heaven shall be. So whether it's environmentalism or anything else, it is our job to create heaven by making the earth a better place, and that's how I look at heaven. And there is no hell. Basically, hell is death, and that's it. And there's nothing that it comes back from. But in Jewish tradition, the righteous will be resurrected. Valley of the Bones, Ezekiel, it's all there. And to live on the heaven that we create on earth.
Well said. Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been a blast.
It's been a lot of fun. We'll do this again, Bob.
And you got to get
absolutely.
On. You got to get on your horse.
I do. I got a television show to do
you've got some
Muslims.
You've got some Iranians to talk to.
I certainly do, Bob. I've really enjoyed this. Annie, I really appreciate what you had to say. All the callers as well. We will do this again sometime. It's been a lot of fun.
We will. Take care, Mark.
Thanks, Bob. Goodbye.
Bye. Whew, I feel like I've run a race. That was two damn good hours of conversation. Tell me where on the radio dial you're going to find that. Tell me where you're going to find that on terrestrial radio. Tell me what radio station beaming to your car radio is going to bring you that. And I'll tell you, it doesn't exist. It only exists here. There isn't even... I dare say that there aren't many internet operations that will bring you what you just got. That's why what's going on here is so very incredibly special. And that's why we made the horn, because we knew we could do something differently than anyone else. And the whole thing, if you want to continue the religious metaphor, the whole thing has been a miracle. Little miracles every day. It's a little miracle every day when Joe Vecchio comes home exhausted and stays up to do his show. It's a little miracle every day when John Fox stays up until the wee small hours of the morning in Australia so he can bring you a morning program in America. It's a little miracle that Guy James can be out there doing what he does every day. It's a little miracle that Billy Shears, in the middle of one of the most god-awful, painful afflictions you can have, kidney stones, that he, through all of this, has put together a brilliant three-hour music program for every Saturday night. It's a little miracle what Mark does. It's a little miracle what Peter does. But these are miracles with practical genesis. Because you're the ones who are the miracle workers. You're the ones who provide the reason for the miracles to happen. You provide it with your donations. You provide it, most importantly, with your time, with your energy, with your thoughts, your calls, your emails. You're dancing bananas in the chat room. You are the miracle workers. We'll take a moment for the news and come back. Share your thoughts. Be part of the miracle. Be part of the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Stone man, my
This is the Quality News Network. For the second day in a row, the Dow Jones Industrial Average lost ground. Even though the Federal Reserve added more cash to the banking system, the market couldn't recover. We'll have the latest numbers coming up in our business segment. Figures from the National Association of Realtors show sales of existing homes fell in 41 states during the April-June quarter. The new numbers indicate home sales are the worst they've been in 16 years. The death toll is climbing in Iraq following a series of truck bombings aimed at a Kurdish sect. An American military spokesman said the blasts that killed at least 250 and injured more than 300 were an act of ethnic cleansing by al-Qaeda. America's top military commander said he's ready to recommend troop reductions in Iraq. General David Petraeus warned that he's against a quick military withdrawal, but said the U.S. footprint in Iraq will have to be smaller by next summer. Mattel has now increased the toy recall to 18 million Chinese-made toys. Baby bibs sold at Toys R Us are also being recalled. Senator Dick Durbin is urging the U.S. to temporarily detain and inspect all shipments of children's products from China that contain paint. Six Italians with reported mafia ties were shot dead outside a train station in Germany. According to authorities, the killings are a continuation of an ongoing feud between rival families with the same crime organization from southern Italy. Former NBA referee Tom Donaghan pleaded guilty today to two felony counts of gambling on NBA games he officiated. Donaghy could face a maximum of 25 years in prison. Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick has not made a decision concerning a plea bargain in his federal dogfighting case. If no agreement is in place by the end of this week, Vick could face more serious charges when a grand jury reconvenes. Tropical Storm Aaron is chugging toward Texas. The storm is threatening to cause flooding to the Lone Star State, which has already sustained an extremely wet summer. And last night, Hurricane Flossie grazed the Big Island of Hawaii as a Category 2 storm, generating powerful waves, high winds, and heavy rain. Flossie was later downgraded to the tropical storm as it continues passing to the south. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have Science and Business coming up next.
Are you one of so many people who wish they could wake up in the morning and look at the clock without fumbling for glasses first? I've got news for you. Your wish can come true. Most cases of nearsightedness, farsightedness, and astigmatism can be corrected by the laser procedure known as LASIK. Now, is this procedure without risk or guaranteed? No, but complications are extremely rare, and the outcomes are almost always positive. And if your results aren't exactly as expected, you can be retreated in most cases for no additional cost. You should be realistic about your expectations, though, especially if you're over 40, because unless you have what's called monovision, you will still need your glasses for reading. See your eye doctor about LASIK. I'm Dr. Nancy Eklund.
The preceding message on eye care by Dr. Nancy Eklund has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your eye doctor.
A hole in one of the astronauts' gloves cut the spacewalk short today while working on the International Space Station. NASA is still deciding whether or not to repair a tear in Endeavour's underside. An advisory panel for the Food and Drug Administration will discuss the safety and effectiveness of over-the-counter cough and cold medicines for children. A group of health professionals recently filed a petition expressing concerns for cold medicines that are risky for children. A study of contagious yawning shows that yawning is based on the capacity for empathy. The behavior apparently plays an evolutionary role in helping groups avoid danger by keeping animals awake and alert. The world's largest food maker, Nestle, posted a better-than-expected profit gain in the first half with an increase of 18%. Macy's, meanwhile, saw second-quarter profits plunge 77% because of a reported merger integration cost. A spokesman for the company's store said the challenging economic environment also hurt earnings. The biotech company Amgen will cut 12 to 14% of its workforce, amounting to about 2,600 jobs as part of a restructuring plan. Light sweet crude oil is trading at $73.33 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was down 167 points at 12,861. The NASDAQ was down 40 points and the S&P 500 down 20 points. There's more on our website.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Ten past the hour. Hour and 50 minutes more of conversation radio coming your way. I'm Bob Kincaid. Someone else I really would have loved to have had in this discussion, and this is sort of a programming announcement. See how cool and smooth I am at segueing into that kind of stuff? I would have loved to have had Peter Godbold in that discussion, because I know of no man of greater faith than Peter Godbold. And Peter will be a repeat tonight, because sometime early this morning there were as many as 4 phone company trucks parked around the little building there that manages the phone system for Peter's small community. And I don't know what they were doing there, because I don't think you can get I don't think you can sleep that many phone guys inside the building, because they obviously weren't fixing the problem. No thunderstorms, no rain, no lightning, no frogs, no locusts, and also no phone and no internet service for Peter Godbold. Now, if another one of those miracles happens, Jesus, miracles. If another one of those miracles happens, and the service comes back before 9 o'clock, you'll have a live Peter Godbold Strictly Confidential. No miracle, no show. And it is completely out of our hands, and it is in the hands of truly incompetent telephone company. See, Peter's phone company is far different than the phone company that we're using now. We are proud to be associated with an organization called CityNet, CityNet. You can find them on the web at citynet.net, and they have a service area that's growing even as we speak. And frankly, they are part and parcel of the new competent, quality, working service that we now have. No more lightning strikes roaring down the telephone lines from Verizon to kill our telephone system. No, 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 no. And in fact, you may have noticed that the sound quality is dramatically better with the shows that come in remotely, like Mark and John and Joe and, Peter someday. And that, again, is CityNet's doing. They have a wide variety of services that they offer, and if you are in an area where you can do business with them, I highly recommend that you do so. Because I've never had such profoundly good tech support. I call tech support, I'm not calling Bangalore. In my instance, I'm calling Bridgeport, West Virginia. And it works. It works. And it works at a highly competitive price. CityNet.net. Check them out, and if you can do business with them, please do, because they're doing business with us, and it's making it possible for you to have the programming that you want. Now, they're not giving it to us for free. This is that part of the program. I'm sorry. But here we are, it's halfway through the month of August, and we have not raised sufficient funds to pay for the next bill. We try to stay, you guys took care of it, you guys took care of August in July. Now we have to take care of September. And I'm just going to tell you bluntly that we're nowhere near it. We're nowhere near meeting our expenses. Now, on the other hand, I want to, and I'm not trying to goon on anybody, because I revere and I honor all the hard work that goes on the progressive side to get information out and counter right-wing spin and outright lying from what passes for journalism in this country. I certainly, certainly am. But I want to somehow make this work for you by comparison. And I guess there's a lot more people that go to this website, so it's better. But for this month of August, our good friends over at BuzzFlash.com need $35,000 for August. 1 month. They have raised $4,820 to date. I hope they get all $35,000. I hope they get $40,000. But I can tell you that if I was on here telling you I had to have $40,000 to get to the end of the month, we'd be done for. We would be, sure enough, done for. It's not what I'm saying. We budgeted that we need to raise between $1,500 and $2,000 a month in order to keep all of this going. And that's all the shows, and that's all the infrastructure here. We're not even a sixth of the way. We just aren't. And I know how hard things are, and I know what a struggle it is. And I don't have any choice other than asking you to remain committed to making this continue to happen. I don't even like giving this talk. But I kind of have to, because if I don't, you'll think, well, everything's hunky-dory and I don't need to do anything. And there have been some payments received. And if you have, in the month of August, this does not apply to you, and thank you. Thank you ever so very, very much. Because as long as y'all are trying, we're going to be right here. And that's my promise. But it's halfway through the month, and we're not even halfway to what we need to raise, just to keep things going. You know, because it's beyond the internet bill and the phone bill. It's a power bill. It's a lot of things. It's everything that keeps us going here. And I do mean everything. It's equipment. You know, we would have been better off from the July fundraising if we hadn't had to pony up, what, $750? Once we factored in all the shipping and everything, if we hadn't had to pony up $750 to fix the telephone hybrid unit that the incompetence of Verizon cooked. And bear in mind that we still had, you know, we only stopped the Verizon service when the CityNet service became active. So, you know, we've still got a Verizon bill to deal with. And those are not small bills. Because Verizon is incredibly expensive. And, you know, I want to continue to promise that you that we will work in at our very frugal best. But somehow along the way, we also have ambitions of making things better than what they are. With the service that we have gotten from CityNet, among other things, we're going to have the bandwidth so that here in the fairly near future, we're going to start sending this program in stereo. And we will even do so for those of you with a high-speed enough connection. We'll do this in CD-quality stereo audio. And won't that be cool? We're moving toward video and getting stuff ready for that. But again, we can't do it as long as all we're doing is treading water. So, you know, just take that into account. And thank you so much in advance. And now I return you to your regularly scheduled ranting redneck, who would be me. But we're going to take a break first. Then we're going to come back. Agnes, you've got a song loaded there, don't you? Okay, this isn't really a break. We're just going to take a minute and run this. Because, you know, Mark was asking so much about my upbringing and the world that I grew up in. And I tried to tell him a little bit about the real loonies in the Church of Christ down there in northwest Alabama. And I mean bad crazy, okay? They're bad crazy wherever they are. And again, don't confuse them with the United Churches of Christ, who are decent, decent, incredibly decent human beings. But, you know, one of my favorite bands is the Drive-By Truckers. because, among other things, members of that band grew up right there at about the same time in the same place that I was growing up. And so they have a sense for the zeitgeist, if you will, of that experience. So to get a sense of what growing up where I grew up was like, I'd like to present you, and oh, I'm sorry, there's a dirty word in it, so you'll just have to deal with it. But this is a song from the Drive-By Truckers, Southern Rock Opera. It's called Zip City, and Zip City's about, 5 miles from where I grew up. This speaks a ton. Hit it, Agnes.
that they built a wall around you. Zip up Tennessee, zip right down to Alabama. Got 350 heads on a 305 engine. I get 10 miles to the gallon. I ain't got no good intentions.
Sorry, but that's just, that's one of those that gets way, way down into the marrow. That's one of Mike Cooley's songs. He and Patterson Hood grew up in that area, and they know it like the back of their hands. And there's a lot of truths in there as far as the region that I grew up in. That and the images that are created, the blood red carpet at the Salem Church of Christ. That is not regionally unique. A lot of us have seen that blood red carpet, and we know what it means. And that's the thing, you know. I think in the conversation that Mark and I had, the profound difference lies in the fascination. I mean, the Jewish people have been persecuted by everybody on earth, just about, for as long as they've been around. And they persecuted a few of their own. And out of all that persecution, they don't have near the blood and death obsession that Christianity does. And that's because of the changes that took place in Christianity long after Christ was dead and gone. Because they invented all this stuff about the you know, there's power, wonder-working power in the blood of the Lamb. And everything's about slaughter. And so, you get that in the southern forms of Christianity. And I mentioned something to Mark as we were wrapping up our discussion, our conversation, that is well worth your attention. Because it happened in Texas. Boy, it's been Texas week here, hasn't it? We've had some Texans every night. But this happened in Texas, but just as it is with the NRA, the National Republican Rifle Association, what they get in one state, they try to move to the next state because their goal is national domination. And the same thing applies to the fundamentalists. And they have achieved something. As I mentioned, it goes into effect September 1st in the state of Texas. It's being described by the fundies, mind you, that public school students in Texas will feel less intimidated by the threat of legal action when sharing or expressing their personal faith on campus, whether it be verbally or in a class assignment. There's actually an audio report of this that I'd love to run, but we can't. The name of this thing, and it's the way it's, see, this is the way it is with Republicans always. They name it what it actually isn't. You know, George Bush's Clear Skies Initiative allows more mercury to be pumped into the air, more carbon dioxide, more poison. The Healthy Forests Initiative allows more trees to be cut down. You know, for money. And in this case, the Religious Viewpoints Anti-Discrimination Act. Because, you know, with 80%+ of Americans of all faiths declaring that they believe in some sort of invisible critter, they believe they're being discriminated against. I guess by the big bad civil libertarians and the evil atheists. Again, the state of Texas legislature that couldn't find time to examine a law that allows Christian ministers to drag little girls behind moving vehicles, this same Texas legislature had time to work out all the crafty little details of the Religious Viewpoints Anti-Discrimination Act. It was approved by the legislature. It was signed into law by Texas Governor Rick Goodhair Perry. Thank you, Molly Ivins. We remember you. And it gives the public schools across Texas until September the 1st to adopt a policy that designates school events where public forums will be... Okay, this is written by Allie Martin. She's a writer for One News Now, which is owned by the American Family Association. She is barely literate. Public forums? No, sweetheart. They are public fora. More than one forum is a fora, you moron, Allie. Our dog's named Allie, too. I hope she didn't hear me. It's okay, sweetheart. I didn't mean you. In other words, the state of Texas has to create a public forum at every public event, at every school event. You know, like at the beginning of the football game where the big fat Baptist preacher comes down and gets behind the microphone. Dear Jesus, we pray that our Red Raiders can knock the living holy snot out of them Blue Devils from cross town tonight, Jesus. Because that's what they do. You gotta pray before the football game. Grant us the victory, O Lord. And there has to be a public forum available for students. I don't know if it's just going to be a little cordoned off area where they can roll and writhe on the ground and handle snakes and drink strychnine. I don't know. But I do know that this is deliberately meant to eviscerate. That is, to remove the guts from the First Amendment that says that you can't cram this kind of religious garbage down another American's throat. Yeah, the hypocrisy is as thick. Oh, it's thicker than the beef stew at Wednesday night fellowship dinner. Because, of course, there won't be any room for people who don't believe in this stuff. And the public fora that are created will not be allowed to be used by people who want to come up and say, hello, you believe that crackers turn into human flesh in your belly. You're crazier than 4 o'clock. No, because that will be termed religious persecution. Because, you see, these freaks are protected under the Constitution from being, you know, discriminated against because they're freaks. And they'll holler, oh, it's a hate crime. They're a hating on us. They're a hating on us because we're fundamentalist weirdos. And this all came about with the help of an organization out of Plano, Texas, called the Liberty Legal Institute. Liberty. Where have I heard that before? Liberty. Wait a minute. It is the dead hand of Jerry Falwell moving upon the face of Texas law. Because one of the things that he succeeded in setting up were a whole bunch of little satellite organizations made up of fundamentalist weirdo lawyers who God knows how they got through law school. And they're running around the country now, just like the NRA, trying to enforce state by state by state by state fundamentalist weirdness, fundamentalist poison. This is Jonathan Sens, S-A-E-N-Z. He's from the Liberty Legal Institute. He is a little Falwell toad. And they wrote the bill for the Texas legislature to pass. And he says, praise Jesus, this bill will give students confidence, glory to God, to be able to talk about what their beliefs are. Hallelujah, just like students talk about all of the kinds of topics and interests they have. they won't feel like they're second-class citizens because they actually talk about something that's religious or they happen to mention the name of God, God, when they're in public school. Something that our Supreme Court has said for years they're allowed to do. Well, if the Supreme Court says they're allowed to do it, Mr. Sins, why did you need to waste the Texas legislature's time getting the damn thing passed? He continued by saying that despite the Supreme Court's standing on the matter, many school districts have been guilty of violating students' freedom of speech. It's been a pattern of cases and a number of cases, and just really the school district showing their unwillingness to follow the law. And so year after year, we see these things happen here in Texas, and we decided enough is enough. They're obviously not following the law as it's been brought down and decided by court cases, so we had to put it in state law so we could make absolutely clear to them what the law is. The bill was sponsored by Republican State Representative Charlie Howard from Sugarland, Texas. That's a suburb of Houston. That's where Bug Spray Delay came from after spending years huffing Malathion or Paraquat or whatever it was when he was an exterminator. And there is apparently something profoundly wrong with Sugarland, Texas. Because, you know, it's Lily White, if I understand correctly, and very well to do. But the heart and soul of all of this is the fact that these freaks, these hateful freaks, aren't satisfied to worship as the First Amendment allows them to do, as they wish. Because you see, this is a law that is designed to make sure that the little freak children can go to school and try to spread their freakishness so that when the teacher says, kids, it's time to dissect the frog, some freak fundamentalist kid can start rolling on the floor and hand, bring me a snake instead, teacher, Jesus! Glory! And that's what it's about. It's about making sure that the rational learning process can be polluted, corrupted, and perverted by religious fear and superstition. Make students comfortable. What, was somebody scourging them in the high school commons there in Plano? Were they stoning Christian students in Texas? Where you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a church? I hardly think so. But you must understand that this is an incremental assault on the First Amendment. Because you know what this thing doesn't... Guess what that statute will not be said to do? If, say, a kid comes into a Texas high school... from the Caribbean, and he practices one of those religions where you have to smoke dope. And he wants to start a chapter of bong hits for Jesus. Where have we heard that before? This law will not protect that student. This law will only protect fundamentalist, backward, dirt-dumb, literalist, dominionist, reconstructionist, religion industry monsters. Now, again, this article was written by a fundamentalist religion industry monster by the name of Allie Martin. And she writes her final paragraph of the story, "The bill, which faced strong opposition from the American Civil Liberties Union and teachers' unions..." Why do you suppose that teachers, not teachers' unions, teachers, why do you suppose teachers would oppose a bill like this? For one, because it defeats their ability to maintain order in the classroom. If a kid starts standing up and a-witnessing, a teacher can't stop it now. If a teacher is teaching about the practical nature of evolution and talks about Homo habilis, some ignorant little dirt dumb fundamentalist kid can stand up and say, "Oh, glory teacher, I object to you raising up the word of homos in my biology class. Yes." My mom and daddy done told me about that law, and I got a right to speak out. Now, I'm a Christian. I'm a Bible-believing Christian. And I ain't going to hear you defaming the blood of my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ by suggesting he was evolved from a homo. At which point, the biology teacher may just as well close his or her book, walk the hell out of the classroom, go on out of the school, and forget about it. This isn't the, what's the title of it again? This isn't the Religious Viewpoints Anti-Discrimination Act. This is the Enforced Stupidity of Texas Children Act. The new law creates guidelines for student speakers at graduation ceremonies, football games, and other school-wide events, and also allows students to organize religious groups and activities. How many things can you think of that you would fit under the rubric of religious freedom? Maybe bringing some pro-war recruiter in to talk about why Jesus wants your 18-year-old ass in the United States Army.
Words will always retain their power. Words are for the means to meaning, and for those who will listen, the enunciation of truth. And the truth is, there is something terribly wrong with this country.
Terribly, terribly, terribly wrong, I tell you. But as I said, and it works this way. Remember when the NRA's sole goal was to just get concealed carry laws in as many states as it possibly could? And they did. And they told, and they sent out the scorecards, and they raided your local legislator. They gave him an F on the Constitution because he didn't support gun rights, even though the guy had never voted. You know, it happened 100,000 times. Legislators who've never taken an overt hostile stand toward the Second Amendment, but they refuse to support the right of people to just walk around with guns strapped to their bodies. So the NRA says, he's opposed to the Second Amendment. He's not a real American. He's probably a communist. I bet he paints his toenails. That's how the NRA did. And so they got it in a bunch of states. And once they got that, they started in Florida with this law that says that anybody who is scared of anybody else can blow them the hell away. Kind of takes a little bit of the starch out of that whole happiest place on earth thing with Disney World, doesn't it? And you see, you know, you see this kind of behavior in stories like this. Headline, woman kills panhandler, authorities say. It's a few days old. It's out of Cincinnati. It's about a week old. A panhandler, a tramp, a bum, walked up to a woman and asked her for 25 cents. And she turned around and pulled a gun and blew his brains out. Because she was scared of him. She's 62 years old, the alleged murderess. The victim, dead at the scene, was 44, my age. His name was Donald Francis. He was homeless. He was standing asking people for money as they went in and out of a gas station when he asked Geraldine Beasley. And Geraldine Beasley, 62, pulled out her Second Amendment rights and blew him to hell. And she's been charged with murder in Ohio, because I don't think Ohio has the shoot 'em if you got 'em law that Florida has yet. If she had done this in Florida, because of the NRA's finagling, all she would have to do is to go into court and say, I was scared of him. He put me in a reasonable fear, so since I was reasonably fearful of him, I blew his stinking brains out. And authorities now say that she is mentally ill. You know, oh, by the way, what's her name that got out of the loony bin, the nut hatch in Tennessee yesterday, who blew her husband away, shot him, her Church of Christ husband? That Church of Christ, by the way, that's the same one that they're singing about in the song we played a few minutes ago. Not the same church, but the same denomination. If that had happened in Florida, she could have said, I was afraid of my husband, so I had to kill him. And they wouldn't even bother having a trial. Now, they'll have a trial in Ohio because the National Republican Rifle Association hasn't had their way with the Ohio legislature just yet. But talking about all this, there's a point here. I really can make a point and come back around to it sometimes on a good day, downhill with a tailwind on a month that doesn't have R in it. The point of this is that the same kind of thinking that led the NRA to believe that every American needs the right to blow away every other American, the same kind of thinking that gives you that gives you the... gives you the Religious Viewpoints Anti-Discrimination Act. You see what I'm saying? Because this isn't the end of it. They'll follow that up once they feel like they're still being discriminated against by making sure that people who oppose their godly Bible-believing views can't say a damn thing about it. And see, this is where Mark Levine and I part company. Because I have no sympathy and no mercy and no compassion for these sons of bitches. None whatsoever. I know how they think, I know how they act, and I know what they want. And what they want is the absolute and utter destruction of our constitutional form of government. And they want to replace it by their interpretation of the Bible. All the stuff that Mark said his people have sort of gotten past, they want to reinstate, right down to the stonings. And unfortunately, moderate Christians or liberal Christians can't quite find it in themselves to come out and just rat slap these people down and tell them that they have nothing to do with the salvation of Christ Jesus in which they believe. Nothing at all. This language just astonishes me. This bill will give students confidence to be able to talk about what their beliefs are. Why do you need to talk about what your beliefs are at school? What you need to be able to talk about at school is the reflexive property of multiple division. You need to be able to sit in your chemistry class and talk about Boyle's gas laws, not God's holy and immutable laws. You need to be able to go to German class and decline a noun, not defy some other child, defy some other child to decline Christ. School is a place for learning, not for ignorance and bigotry and superstition. This breaks my heart. I come from a long line of teachers. And I'm sure, since they were in large part religiously insane, that they did their fair share of proselytizing in the classroom. But they really were also dedicated to passing on knowledge. and they did a lot more passing on of knowledge than they did passing on of religion. We don't need to know what the child's witnessing is in geometry class. The witness to geometry is Euclid. And the witness to geometry's truth is the proof of the Pythagorean theorem, for God's sakes, or the quadratic equation and the way it makes that lovely parabola appear on a piece of graph paper. That's all the witnessing we need. Do these fool Texan the fundamentalists actually think that God is watching their Friday night football games? That he's got God's got the over on the Southside Dallas versus Northside Dallas high school game? Honest to God, can you sit down with these people and ask, do you really, really believe that? God is watching over every one of us. Not a sparrow falls to the earth, but God knows about it. Not a sparrow falls, nor a pass is dropped, nor a punt return fumbled, that God is not aware. And if we pray hard enough, we can make that slippery-fingered little fella that fumbled in the fourth quarter last week hang on to the damn ball for once. Jesus, 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 Jesus. Yeah, this bill goes into effect at the same time that having to say under God in the Texas Pledge of Allegiance goes into effect. These stupid, addle-brained, mud-headed laws are the proof of the failure of our system of representative government. The loonies are in charge of the asylum now, and the asylum is in the Texas legislature. I used to think once in a while that I'd like to see Texas. I'm afraid to go there. I really am. I'm scared to death of Texas. Been to Mississippi, been to Louisiana, been to Arkansas, grew up in Alabama, lived in Georgia, been to Tennessee plenty, Missouri, yeah, Oklahoma, Scared to damn death of Texas. Don't know how a liberal or a progressive gets from one day to the next there. I honest to God don't. And I admire them for having the courage. Well, I guess they all live in Austin or within driving distance of the sanity of Austin. But the laws that these monsters pass, the school system in Texas is crumbling. The first Bush education secretary, Rod Page, was a great big giant howling fraud and practically destroyed the Houston school system and other parts as well. And this is the best that they can come up with. A crumbling infrastructure, a crumbling government, a crumbling state. And they're worrying about whether children feel free enough to witness about their personal relationship with Christ Jesus. Let's go to the phones. Let's talk to Alan. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
I'm okay. How about you?
Oh, hanging in there. This subject has always bothered me. I always hate somebody to try to convert me to their religion.
Mm-hmm.
But like Mark was saying earlier, since he kind of laughed it off, it's a lot easier to laugh it off when you know about religion and know how to debate these people. And in the past, I didn't know as much as I do now. It really helps out. But anyway, I wouldn't like my kids to be proselytized when they go to school, because that's what they're not going to school to learn religion.
No, they're not. They're going to learn really important stuff to get them through the rest of their lives. They can pick up religion on any street corner church. Because it's not like we're hurting. It's not like we're hurting for churches, Alan.
I know it. I know they want churches on every corner, but then they want it in school also.
Yeah, because they are, you know, and if you're even remotely honest with yourself about this, you realize that the only reason they need to do this is so that they can ram their beliefs down your throat, because in their heart of hearts, you do not have the right to believe as you wish. That's the end of the day argument for fundamentalist Christians in America. You do not have the right to believe as you wish.
Yeah, it's their job to convert other people. Their job as a Christian, which that's not in any other religion but Christianity that I know of.
Pretty well, you know, Islam has. Islam's holy book, of course, says that there is no compulsion in religion, but by the same token, they have historically had a very strong proselytizing arm. That arm was frequently holding a sword.
In this country, I have never had anybody try to convert me to their religion other than Christians.
Well, I have had a few run-ins with Krishnas at the airport.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think I have too.
But they're pretty easy to blow off, and the Moonies, the Moonies were always there, but they wanted your money more than they wanted your soul.
Yeah, that's a strange type of Christianity, I think.
Yeah, it is. We've talked about it some on this program. It's highly disturbing.
Yeah, I think back when I was a Christian, I belonged to a Christian group that was a little different. When I told other people, other Christians that I belong to this group, next thing you know, that I was they wanted to convert me to their type of Christianity. I guess once they think they're going to run the whole country, I guess they'll be all at war against each other, because there's not Christians who think the same.
Yeah, they'll start going at each other, calling each other heretic. But, you know, I'm not willing to wait for that. Let's stop them before they can get to it. Right, Alan?
That's right. Yeah, and I really liked the conversation you had earlier. I really like when people talk about religion like you were talking about with your friend, I think Mark Levine.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe sometime I'd get my friend who's a Buddhist monk to get in on the conversation.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Gishe?
Yeah, Dorji... Gishi Dorji.
Yeah. I'd love to have him on again. Perhaps next time that Mark and I decide to do this, I'll have enough advance warning that I can get him on the panel as well.
Yeah, that would be great.
Well, Alan, are you on the road right now, or are you at home?
No, I'm on the road. I'm up here in Oklahoma. I just went through Texas, so.
glad you made it out, my friend. I'm glad you made it out.
I think there's a lot of people in Texas that are really disappointed with these people, because I've always thought that the Western people in the West have always had an independent way of thinking, and for Christians to try to government and everything, I think that contradicts the independent way of the Western way of thinking. Well, I hope so anyway.
Yeah, I share your hope. Alan, we got to roll to the news. Always good to talk to you, though, my friend.
Okay, thank you.
Later now. Stay safe. Get on out of Oklahoma quick as you can, Alan. That ain't much better than Texas. They shoot children for thinking they're snakes there. Mother. All right. Little break for the news, then we come back with your phone calls to 877-443-2366 or 304-658-5453. Jump right in. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn.
When I'm sampling from your bosom, sometimes I suffer from distractions like, why does God cause things like tornadoes and train wrecks?
This is the Quality News Network. More problems for financial markets. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed below 1,300 for the first time since April. We'll have the latest numbers coming up in our business segment. The death toll is climbing in Iraq following a series of truck bombings aimed at a Kurdish sect. An American military spokesman said the blasts that killed at least 250 and injured more than 300 were an act of ethnic cleansing by al-Qaeda. America's top military commander said he's ready to recommend troop reductions in Iraq. General David Petraeus warned that he's against a quick military withdrawal, but said the U.S. footprint in Iraq will have to be smaller by next summer. Several major news organizations are reporting the Bush administration says it's preparing to label Iran's elite Revolutionary Guard a global terrorist organization. That designation will allow the government to block the group's assets and essentially cut off the network that funds them. The State Department would not confirm such a plan. The search for six men trapped in a mine collapse in Utah is in its 10th day, and options for rescuers are running out. Mining experts say chances are slim of finding the men alive, but not impossible. Last year in Australia, two men were rescued after 14 days underground when a similar collapse happened. Six Italians with reported mafia ties were shot dead outside a train station in Germany. According to authorities, those killings are part of an ongoing feud. Mattel has now increased its toy recall to 18 million Chinese-made toys. Senator Dick Durbin is leading the call for better regulation overall. He's urging the U.S. to temporarily detain and inspect all shipments of children's products from China. Texas is bracing for Tropical Storm Erin, which will likely make landfall tomorrow morning. Forecasters say heavy rain, 3 to 8 inches in some areas, will likely cause flooding after an already extremely wet summer. Last night, Hurricane Flossie just grazed the big island of Hawaii as a Category 2 storm, bringing high waves, rain, and powerful winds. Two co-defendants of Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick will enter their pleas on Friday in the illegal dogfighting case. Their testimony, along with one other defendant who entered a plea, could result in more charges against Vick unless he strikes a plea deal himself before then. You're listening to Quality News Network.
Hey, what's he doing?
What?
That guy is changing his oil in the street and letting it run right in the storm drain, which pollutes the bay. I totally wouldn't serve him that.
Dude, what can we do?
Call 1-800-CLEANUP to report anyone dumping oil, antifreeze, or paint in the street.
This way, fools like that can be fined.
Tell everyone to call 1-800-CLEANUP.
Taking care of the marine sanctuary is your duty. From Mayos at Monterey High.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to a million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Australian scientists say they found a previously undiscovered underwater current uniting the planet's oceans, part of the system controlling the world's climate. The current travels offshore south of Tasmania. A hole in one of the astronaut's gloves forced him to cut his spacewalk outside the International Space Station short today. NASA says he was in no danger as the hole was only in the two upper layers of material, and they have five total layers of fabric on those gloves. NASA is still deciding whether or not to repair a tear in the Shuttle Endeavour's underside. An advisory panel for the Food and Drug Administration will discuss the safety and effectiveness of over-the-counter cough and cold medicines for children. A group of health professionals recently filed a petition expressing concerns for cold medicines that are risky for children. Citrix Systems has agreed to buy privately owned Zensource for $500 million. The infrastructure software maker says buying Zensource will allow Citrix to enter and compete in a whole new market area. Light sweet crude is trading at $73.33 a barrel on the New York Mercantile. Experts again are blaming credit worries for the down market. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 167 points at 12,867. The Nasdaq was down 40. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Tonight.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Almost six past the hour. Welcome to hour three of this sort of extended Super Friends version of prayer meeting. I'm Brother Bob. This is the Cathedral of Common Sense, and you are welcome at the altar. Let's go to the phones. Susan's been waiting a little bit. Hey, Susan, welcome aboard.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. If people want to see where this thing with the religious right can go, I know you've already been there because you're a science fiction fan.
Yeah.
But if you're not normally, go out and get a book called Revolt in 2100 by Robert I. Heinlein. And that introduces you to the work of a gentleman named Nehemiah Scudder.
Yep.
Who started out life as a fundamentalist, backwards, ignorant preacher who happened to marry a woman who owned a radio station.
Yeah.
And oh boy, did he go on from there. He became the founder of the American Taliban and turned the entire United States into a theocracy.
Of course, I was also thinking came to me first was the Fosterites in Stranger in a Strange Land.
Oh, yeah.
Well, frankly, it's it is effectively we're a lot closer to the what was the name of the church that they were just called Fosterites? The Church of the New Revelation.
Yeah.
The Church of the New Revelation. We're not far from that at all, and I highly recommend because the other view of God that's espoused in that book, by Valentine Michael Smith, the Thou Art God, which is, I guess it's kind of a throwback to what Kierkegaard.
More or less.
But that you know that's as close to explaining where I come from on a spiritual level as anything that I'm aware of, because you know when I look at the universe. And I realize that the entire planet that we live on is less than the size of a thousandth of a grain of sand in the scope of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the math. You know, we don't have. It's not the math for big things that we need. We don't have the math to express how small we are. We don't have the math of smallness.
Yeah.
We are statistically insignificant. Just as the population of the United States is a rounding error to the population of the People's Republic of China, so too the entire planet doesn't even qualify as a rounding error in the universe.
Right. I like to think of it as whether you are a non-sleeper or a Jew or a Muslim, whatever, or which... As long as you serve the light, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
But if you are the type that passes bills like this thing in Texas, you're not serving the light.
Yeah, I know.
No.
This is it's a bill of darkness. It really is.
Yeah.
Because anything that impedes learning, that impedes a search for truth, can't help but be poison to the human spirit.
Now, the reason I mentioned Nehemiah Scudder, though, is because more people can really relate to that, because he came out of the backwoods, and how many preachers have done just exactly that, married some woman who happened to own a radio station and went yaha from there.
Yeah, I know.
It's as common as mud,
and
it's just that Heinlein took it a little bit further.
Yep. And I need to go and reread that. That one's one I haven't been around in a while, so...
Oh, yeah. I got to go and reread all of my Heinlein since I went and put 4,000 books in my computer. I called it my Labor of Hercules, So now I know where all my
What, did you sit there and you scanned them in?
No, I have this program where I had to box all my books up, which meant I couldn't find any of them.
Ah, so you organized them.
What I did was I went in and I numbered every box, and then I have this nice program called Byron that allows me to go in, and any book I want, I go in and I say, okay, I want this book, and then I look it up, and I say, oh, it's in box 45. So I go toddling into the room and pull out box 45. Oh, there it is.
Cool.
It's better than nothing. You know, I'm in the middle of a major shoveling out of the house. That was the only thing I could think to do of with the books, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Susan, I've got, oddly enough, I've got the line stacked up, so this time I got to run through.
Okay.
All right.
Have fun.
Take care.
You have a nice
You too. Bye. And Jim? Hey, Jim.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm all right, I reckon.
Well, you got it going on tonight. I'll tell you that.
Appreciate
it. You know, what really scares me is the fact that these people, in fact, really wish to establish some type of theocracy.
They do.
And, of course, when you have that type of system established, you lose so much of the beauty and the majesty and the ennobling features of religion. And you make it not an instrument of love, but an instrument of fear. And, you know, to me, these people are just sounding brasses and tinkling cymbals. They really are.
But they have, they would be sounding brass and tinkling cymbals, Jim, but they have entire legislative bodies in their thrall.
Yeah, that's rather frightening because it's, I don't know what they're trying to, well, first they're going to say, well, God is on my side, but my question to them is, you know, are you on God's side?
Well, that's what Abraham Lincoln asked, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and that gives me cause for great concern. I mean, I have religious beliefs. We've talked about those, but, you know, I don't want to impose those on anybody else. I mean, my attitude is, not much, but it's just let 100 flowers bloom, let 100 schools of thought contend. And, you know...
Oh, and I think that's what Mark was talking about in saying that, you know, the more questions you ask, the more likely you are to get to answers. If you're not asking questions, there are no answers.
But I think what is the principal guiding thing here is this, that these are the kinds of people, and I've said this before, who would have been the Pharisees and the established religious orders, who would have been the ones yelling, crucify and crucify, you know, because that's basically what they were trying to establish in the area in which Christ preached his ministry. They wanted to establish some type of theocracy, and I guess they were held in some kind of check by the Romans who ruled them, but nonetheless, they were pretty intolerant and just intolerant of being almost bestial. And today you have these people who talk about the Antichrist and this, that, and the other, and I think it was... one of the leading saints of the church, he said, Saint Augustine, who said, if you look for the Antichrist, look for it within yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
And
although, you know, that's,
that makes a lot of sense.
It does, but that's not what the fundies say. Of course, the fundamentalists have declared. I forget which fundamentalist it was. It was Falwell. Declared that the Antichrist is alive on planet Earth right now, and he is a Jewish man.
Well, I'm not too sure about all that, but all I know is this. I see and hear some of these religious programs, particularly one of the more right-wing ones, and, you know, some of these things where they have these people who are miraculously healed, or you see these people who seem to tell you where the end of days is, and like Hagee and people like that. I mean, I think the Antichrist is not necessarily one Jewish man riding around in a black limousine, but it's basically, I think it's them to a certain extent.
Sure it is.
And if there is such an Antichrist riding around, he counts these people among his allies, and he relies upon them quite heavily.
Well, Jim, the fact of the matter is, if Jesus did say that broad is the road, you know, that leads to hell, wouldn't that indicate that these fundamentalists have a real problem? Because it's hard to get that many fundamentalists on a narrow path.
Well, I can't argue with that. You're absolutely right. And I really think that they have missed the boat, and they are really hurting the beauty and the more ennobling characteristics of the faith. And it gives me cause for great concern when they want to turn public schools into seats in which they can dominate and to, you know, bend the minds of children and things like that. I don't think that's where it should be. I mean, if they want to have this thing in their own churches and stuff like that, then so be it. I have no problem.
Nor do I. But they will not keep it in their churches. They feel like they are compelled to take it outside the churches. We were talking, I guess it was Friday evening when I had the conversation with Max Blumenthal, and we were talking about the youngest of the Baldwin brothers, Stephen.
Oh, yeah. That was just horrible.
Well, one of the things I didn't get to was the fact that Stephen Baldwin at one point stood outside a, you know, I guess a dirty bookstore at Times Square or some such. And he wrote...
He probably went inside, knowing him. He probably not only stood outside, but he probably went in there, too. You know?
Well, but what he did is he took down the license plate numbers of everybody who went in there. Then he backtracked the license plates, got the names, and published them in the newspaper. And then he said that, "I don't think my faith will allow me to stand silent in the face of such sin."
Well, he must be awfully bored.
I wish it was boredom. It isn't.
I mean, you know, I can remember when the police used to do that in the Deep South, when the Klan would have a meeting, and they would have them outside in these, you know, you're from Alabama, or you know Alabama pretty well, and I'm from South Carolina. Hell, I remember when, as kids in high school, we used to just crawl up there to see what the Klan was doing, just out of curiosity, and you see the highway patrol out there taking down license tag numbers and stuff like that, and you know, they put these people on all kinds of lists. And, you know, that kind of activity, the Klan scares me, but also the fact that somebody recording your license plate because you're somewhere where they don't think you ought to be, that scares me even worse. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Am I making any sense tonight?
No, you're making perfectly good sense, and that's what makes, you know, Stephen Baldwin made that statement when he was paid to come down to a Texas megachurch and speak. And said
paid,
that,
huh?
Yeah,
paid. Hey, you know, a little hush money does a lot of talking, doesn't it?
Or a little yak money. You know, they wasn't trying to hush nothing.
Well, one
of the primary fallings out that I had with the church where I grew up, Jim, happened after I was gone from there. There's two of them. They broke my mother's heart for one. But for the other, they took the offering money that came into the collection plate and paid some $25,000 to Oliver North to come and speak to them at a revival for two nights running.
Oliver North?
Yes, sir.
Well, you know, I wish that they had taken a look at the Alexandria, Virginia police blotter when Ollie North was running around butt-ass naked through the streets of that city and had to be booked.
Oh, but see, he was forgiven. He was forgiven. They're not, you know, they're not, they've got bumper stickers and stuff that say, "Not perfect, just forgiven." Just like this right-wing fundamentalist freak Republican judge who has family values out in Colorado that got, got busted in his divorce proceeding, spent $3,000 on two consecutive nights at the the Diamond Cabaret strip joint,
and didn't remember a thing he did.
Couldn't remember nothing.
Well, I've heard of discretionary memory, but that sort of takes the cake, doesn't it?
And by God, discretionary spending too, wasn't it?
Well, I hope he had a good time, but like I say, he must have went to the champagne room, the flamingo room, the dew room, the dope room.
And got the hot tub bath in the process.
And I hope he got the hot wax, too, for whatever. But they ought to absolutely take his behind off that court and impeach him for that kind of behavior. Because, I mean, a judge is supposed to sort of be above people and be able to judge behavior. Correct, and point them in the right direction.
Well, a judge is supposed to avoid even the appearance, Jim, the appearance like of impropriety.
Like Caesar's wife, exactly. And I see so many of these people who say one thing, and they do another. And when they get caught, then they all of a sudden they have this epiphany that's designed to get their ass out of some kind of crack in which it's fallen.
Yeah, know? I never knew the road to Damascus to run through a strip joint, but I reckon it does.
It boggles my mind. I don't know. But, you know, I just have my own beliefs, and I hope these people will leave me alone. They probably won't, but, you know, I guess one day they'll probably use me to light up their garden one day. Who knows? I don't know.
Well, it'll be a whole bunch of us, Jim. Thank you very much. I enjoyed the conversation tonight.
Well,
Jim.
I did, too. So you have a
good. All right. You take care.
Good night.
Bye now. Now, Agnes, wait on the button for just a second. Our good friend Joe Vecchio is on the line, and we're going to bring him on board just in a second. I want to share something with you. It was Joe who brought it to our attention about a month and a half ago that there was a contest out there for it was to fund the infrastructure, the progressive infrastructure. So I wrote, they wanted an essay of 1,000 words or less, and so I wrote them one. Because they were going to give out $5,000 and they were going to give email support and PR support. And they wanted to know how you would build progressive infrastructure and things like that. And this is going to take me a couple of minutes, so please bear with me. This is what I wrote. I told these folks, the Head On Radio Network, the Horn, is a progressive conversation radio project operating on the Internet. We produce more than 12 hours of live, liberal conversation per day and operate a free 24/7 stream and told them where it's available. All Horn programs are available free to listeners in archive and live format. The Horn has been broadcasting since October 2005 on little more than grit, determination, and a passionate commitment to a progressive future for America. Callers to Horn programs are treated with dignity and respect, like the workaday experts that they truly are, afforded the time for discussion and dialogue that progressive ideas demand. Newsmakers who participate in conversations on the Horn are treated to a rare opportunity to really delve into the substance of their ideas. Bloggers and activists who engage in conversations on the Horn see spikes in their web traffic. Hosts on the Horn, all of whom are as yet unpaid volunteer professionals, have the freedom to give full expression to the progressive issues that mean the most to them. For John Fox, broadcasting from Sydney, Australia, it means environmental green issues. For Joe Vecchio in Chicago, it's all about what it means to be a worker in the capitalist miracle that is Bushmerica. Dr. Bill O'Brien addresses how the liberal ideas that formed this country have been perverted and subverted by conservatives. Guy James in Florida has the heart of a lion and calls the right wing to task at every turn, channeling the progressive values of FDR and JFK. Mark Levine, a D.C. lawyer and former Democratic Hill staffer, delivers crushing deconstructions of conservative policy. Peter Godbold in Florida is a gay man who takes that community's issues and makes them issues for all of us. Bob Kincaid, from his perch on a mountain in West Virginia, is a recovering Southern Baptist who calls down fire and brimstone on the conservatives who try to kill the progressive experiment that is America. Agnes Kincaid is the production manager. She coordinates the broadcast schedule and interacts with volunteer bloggers, moderators, and news gatherers. She's our den mother. How does the Horn build progressive infrastructure? In a little less than 2 years' time, we've built a radio network incomparable to any other effort. As more and more progressives have come to understand the necessity of countering the right-wing talk radio echo chamber, the Horn has been there with an open invitation for every liberal, every progressive, to join a national dialogue and discussion about where we need to go and how we need to get there. At the Horn, we have built and continue to build the progressive infrastructure for broadcast conversation on the Internet. We like to think of it as a classic old-fashioned American front porch chat, brought about through the miraculous immediacy of the Internet. We have a chance, with support as we grow, to utterly change the conversational paradigm in this country, to make progressive ideas dominant over the tired lies of conservatism. The Horn offers toll-free access for callers to our programs, a blog, message boards, and a chat room. Future plans call for the addition of live video on demand as well as expansion to a 24/7 live schedule. Because our hosts are workaday Americans, the Horn isn't polluted with celebrity egos or the salaries they demand. We bring an informed humility and a recognition that the listeners, the people who share the finite hours of their lives with us, are the real source of progressive change in America. Progressive change begins with respect for progressive people and their ideas. That is the starting point from which the Horn proceeds. As noted above, the people who make the Horn happen do so out of a passionate commitment to a progressive future for America. The network began with a microphone, a mixing board, a computer, and one program. It has grown to its current state because progressives hungry for change, hungry for a chance to be heard, hungry for what Lincoln called a rebirth of freedom, have made the Horn grow by almost nothing more than sheer force of will. With that kind of commitment, we can grow the progressive infrastructure into a juggernaut that will be able to withstand the flood tides of conservative hate and invective. The greatest hope for a vibrant, active, activist progressive infrastructure happens every single day on the Horn. While we operate more frugally than any other broadcast operation, we cannot operate without funds. The Horn got started 2 years ago with a $15,000 ad contract from a labor union. That enabled the Horn to remain viable up to the present. We have recently begun allowing listeners to contribute to the financial upkeep of the network. Our financial receipts are far less than the limit established in the guidelines for this award, being less than $3,000 in the last year. Our efforts of necessity have been focused on creating programs as opposed to selling. One must have something to sell before the selling can begin. The $5,000 offered in this contest will enable the Horn to stay on the air for nearly another year by providing support for bandwidth, telephony, electricity, and an entry into video. The publicity and email support will enable us to grow and make more progressives aware that they can have a voice with which to engage in dialogue. Given the time commitment required to produce as much programming as we do, publicity support will generate the listener base growth needed to create a critical mass of activist energy. Progressives are in a position of having to play catch-up to conservative broadcasting. Recent studies make it clear that there is little likelihood of progressive radio making any sort of breakthrough in conservative-dominated radio ownership. That means we have to engage the power of the future. The future is happening now, on the Internet, on the Horn. And I signed it, best regards, Bob Kincaid, Agnes Kincaid, John Fox, Peter Godbold, Guy James, Joe Vecchio, Bill O'Brien, and Mark Levine. Well, folks, the ballots have been tallied and the winners have been announced. We ain't one of them. I had real hopes. I really did. One should never count unhatched chickens, of course, but I had real hopes. But we didn't make the cut. No, we didn't make the cut. We couldn't beat Precinct Map and Voting History Online Application, which is a fine program. We couldn't beat the Candidate Source Internet Video Project, that's a project to transcribe and catalog political content found on video sharing sites like YouTube. We didn't beat out the Black Agenda report. We didn't beat out blogging the State House Jersey style. And we also lost to Blogs United, which is currently an unincorporated online organization by and for local and regional progressive bloggers and online activists with 250 members, that exists to provide a useful and relevant source of information and communication for progressive bloggers working locally. And we also fell behind to Soapbox Security Upgrade. I wish them all very, very well. But I was really, really hoping that I could announce to you that it had been us, and that I could take the monkey off of your back for a little while as far as fundraising was concerned. Guess what? Reach around your shoulder and scratch the monkey, okay? Keep the monkey happy. I'm sorry. Joe Vecchio joins us. He's the one who found this contest in the first place. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Bob. You had me write a check there myself, listening to that letter.
I was proud as
you know, I don't have anything.
Joe, I was proud as punch of that thing.
Yeah, and I'm not really surprised. I mean, we had discussed this before, and I've discussed it on my show, and you discussed it on your show. It all seems to me to be, all the big fundraising stuff seems to be rich liberals trading their money back and forth among each other. And, you know, and I don't know how many times I have to bring up what George Lakoff said. You know, the right will give $1 million to an organization and say, do what you need to do. The left will give $50,000 if you're lucky and demand accountability for every single penny. And you wonder why we're losing. You know, we're winning some battles, but we're losing the war, Bob. And we're losing the war because we're under-weaponed. And we're under-weaponed because, you know, like I didn't do my show because I was so damn tired from going to work all night, having been up all the afternoon before. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
I don't want to sound bitter about this, and I don't want to sound snarky even.
I want to sound bitter and snarky because it goes on all the time. And I'm looking at these guys, and I'm thinking, these guys have been doing pretty good efforts raising money themselves. I checked out a few of them, and, you know, they all have the little donate buttons up. Everybody does, you know. And then, of course, what BlogPack does is they go out and they solicit more funds from people. And that's really all they do. They ask for you to give your money. They ask for you to give your time. But when somebody actually tries to put some effort into something and put some work and say, hey, listen, I can use a little help here, they're like, no hablo inglés.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like that commercial where the guy was teaching all the different immigrants about how to say, give me a Bud Light and all the different dialects. Yo, dude, give me a Bud Light, right? Yeah. But when someone asks you, you say, what do you say?
No habla inglés. Gee whiz. It's frustrating.
It is frustrating.
Because I really felt like that was, forgive me, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I felt like that was a really, really good explanation of what the horn means, what we're trying to do, and the power and the passion and the commitment that goes into it.
Right.
I guess this is just further proof of the number of people out there who don't get the importance of having a talk radio medium to oppose the other one with.
And we're not the only network, but the other network that's out there, I don't know if you want me to say them by name, but the other network that's out there that does internet stuff mainly, although they do broadcasts as well, they're having trouble raising funds. I was speaking with a good friend, Ben Birch, at the White Rose Society about that.
Yeah, everybody's out there, and everybody's... See, that's what drives me crazy about our need to step into this pool. Everybody's out there panhandling, and it drives me batshit crazy.
Look, I went to that yearly COAST thing, and they're asking for donations like crazy. I spoke to a guy, some of the bigger of people, they were asking, you know, for $10,000 or $15,000, and they were getting that. And I look at their expenses, and I look at the money they raised, and I'm saying, you know, they're really raising a lot more than they need to spend. and I'm wondering where the money's going to. And we've discussed this before. We talk about daily calls. Which,
I want people, you know.
It's a great job, but look, he's raising, you know, Marcos himself is probably raising a conservative estimate of something like $30,000 to $40,000 a week. That's a very conservative estimate. And where is that money going? Is it all going in his pocket? What's he doing with it? I know, you know, is he donating to Yearly Coast? Is he, you know?
We don't know.
Yeah,
and you know, and that's
exactly.
The you know, all of these things are 501c3s, so there's no real financial transparency. And you know, I don't know what to do. I mean, I'll be honest, Joe. I get very, very grim. I get very, very pessimistic when I go over to one of the news sites that I use, because they're all doing it, whether it's Alternet or Truth Out or Buzzflash. They're all text sites. And I go over and I find out that the pressing need for Buzzflash this month is $35,000 to pay the credit card and staff bills.
So what are they spending their money on? I don't understand.
I don't either. And I don't want to make, you know, and listen, I don't want
to
make an enemy of them. I'm worried about this. I'm not going to, I don't want to be perceived as bitter or sour grapes. I don't want that. But God Almighty. Everybody's in this thing together.
Yeah, you just want to, you know, you just got to be part of the clique, and we're just not part of the clique. And that's the only way I can see it. We're simply not part of the clique.
Well, somebody tell me how to be part of the clique. Tell me whose butt I got to kiss.
I have no idea. I mean, we thought we knew. We, you know, or at least we thought we know who could approach with this and who would help out, but apparently not. And these guys made this offer, and realistically, you know, they had what? They said they had 25,000 and change in their budget for this sort of thing. That's not a lot of money to begin with. I mean, you know, when you talk about running an entire network like this, if you really want to do it the right way and have, I mean, and look, you know me, I've talked about this before. I don't need to work for millions of dollars. Enough to pay my rent, enough to pay my bills, and enough for me to, you know, to be able to eat. And I'm happy. You know, it doesn't take a lot.
Yeah, I know. I know.
But apparently it's too much to ask.
Apparently it is, Joe. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry to say that. I mean, I'm not.
Too, you know,
I'm not trying. Again, I'm.
Better. And I'm going to avoid writing the people who say, well, you know, you just proved again. Well, you know, because I look, you know, these things are really nice, but I just don't understand what massive huge difference they're going to make. I think we would have a lot more of an impact if we can get some publicity out.
Well, I do. No. I do think it would be really cool if there was a place you could go and type in a search and say you wanted to find Dennis Kucinich speaking to. But wait, that function already exists, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, pretty much.
Well, okay, never mind. But look, I think the fundamental thing is that you see radio or talk radio. And liberals being liberals, a lot of people do not get this medium. See, if I or you were to explain to somebody who is just butt obsessed with the blogosphere that what we're doing, I mean, if you took a text recognition program, Joe, and you fired it up and you hooked the microphone into it. For the hour that you do, or the three that I do, and I was thinking in terms of the three that I do, it probably comes out to about 50 pages of blogging a night. Is there any one blogger out there doing 50 pages of blogging a night?
Not by themselves. I mean, even blogs don't do anywhere near that much.
We do, Joe. But we do it in the spoken word. We do it in the single most immediate form of the medium that there is. Because this isn't static words on a page, and you don't have to type LOL or /snark. By God, you can hear from the tone of voice when somebody's being a pretentious ass, like I do a lot.
Right.
This is reality, Joe. Frankly, a lot of the blogosphere is, I'm going to say it, the hell with it, a lot of the blogosphere is self-centered masturbation.
Yeah, you know, and Carol Kay, my good friend from MakeThemAccountable.com, I asked her if she wanted to attend Yearly Coast, or if she did attend, and she was like, I don't want self-congratulatory people. You know, and, cause that, and she's absolutely right about that. And a lot of them are just basically full of themselves. And I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. But, you know, they've got all the money. I mean, you know, Marcos can sit back and laugh and joke. And, you know, they didn't start, the big political people didn't start paying attention to him until the potential for him to raise money for candidates came about, because that's really all they care about. If Marcos, for whatever reason, couldn't raise a dime for candidates, they wouldn't even talk to him. And that's really what it's all about, you know. And all this money goes into television, and basically paying the television stations to continue the Republican propaganda that they've been doing pretty much. So, you know, and so that's what, you know, when you donate $5 or $10 to, that's basically where it's going for television ads, because that's the most expensive thing. And how long have I been advertising for ads on my show? And what am I asking for ads? I got as cheap as $5 an ad.
Yeah.
Okay, $300 buy you three months worth of ads every day on the show. And do I get a taker for that? No, not at all.
And see, I want to back up, because somehow or another I want to make sure that the distinctions are very, very plainly drawn in this, Joe. There are brilliant writers out there doing blogs. They are damned brilliant. Okay? And then the people who post comments behind them, though, that's where the masturbation exercise takes place. Because it's not a dialogue. There's nothing dialogue about it. It's, I posted a comment and I want to see if somebody LOLs me.
Right.
I've watched it 1,000 times.
Oh, that's why I stopped posting a diary on Daily Coast. I post under the name of Cup of Joe, but every time I post something, it's always the same thing. Well, you know, you forgot to add this little detail here, so you suck. I see. I just raised myself up one level in the Coast community by showing off this person who did a bad thing. Aren't I a good person? And then they can brag to their friends. Hey, I got front paged on Coast. You know, it's kind of like what it used to be. You used to think getting a letter printed in a newspaper was a cool thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've had several letters in a newspaper printed. You know what? It means nothing. It means nothing. It means you're a crank who wrote a letter to a newspaper and managed to get it.
It means you got too much time on your hands.
I'm sorry?
It means you got too much time on your hands.
It means you got too much time on your hands. Hell, I've had two letters published in the New York Times, for Christ's sake. You know how hard that is? But, you know, it means nothing. It means nothing. What does it translate? Nothing.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I'm just kind of rambling,
No. I don't think you're.
I'm not surprised.
Joe, you're not rambling at all.
Against hope, you know that something might happen here, but obviously we reached out. Now, we're still going to keep doing this network, right? I mean,
I ain't going anywhere.
We're talking about this, and you know, money's always tight, but we're still going to keep doing this, aren't we?
We're going to keep doing this until the money comes out and the guys come through the door and take the equipment away.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, until, you know, for me, I'm going to do my show for as long as you have me until I'm not out in the street homeless, basically.
Jesus. What a damn thought.
Just because I believe in it. Just
well,
like
here, let's inject
like
a little.
James believes in it. Just
yeah.
Like Peter Godbold believes in it. Just like Mark Levine, just like Dr. Bill O'Brien. We all do here. And Agnes, of course, certainly Agnes, who does such a wonderful job. She did just a wonderful job producing this morning for my show, you know. We you know, I don't know how many times I say this, we do this because we're compelled to do it, because we feel like if we don't do it, that there's going to be something missing in our lives, that we felt that we didn't do enough.
And, yeah, and
you know, maybe it's not enough to the big money brokers, and that's what really concerns me about what's going on in this country. Here we have the most powerful tool for communications ever devised in human history, and one aspect of it is doing very well, but they haven't even begun to take advantage of the other aspect of it. Because the reason why the Rush Limbaughs of the world and the Neil Bortz's of the world was successful was because the right wing bought out all the damn radio stations and could pipe all their crap into everybody's workplace day in and day out and sour everybody on anything having to do with progressive politics or just progressive activity. Just crush it. If you want to know why the country's in an idiocracy right now, you want to know why everybody's tarted, it's because of Rush Limbaugh, it's because of Neil Bortz, and it's because they put the money into it. And we didn't.
Yeah. And we're not gonna.
And we're not gonna.
You know, please, let's understand something. You don't walk down Michigan Avenue in Chicago and people go, "Oh my God, it's Joe Vecchio."
Right.
And it doesn't happen to me here either.
They say, "Hey buddy, you got a dollar?"
Yeah.
That's what they say to me. "You got a dollar?" I said, "Move over, I'll be joining you next week."
Yeah. Jesus, you're good. But you know, I don't have time for an ego. Whatever ego I had, I think I purged a good long while back, Joe.
Well, Bob, you hear me talk every time we talk after the show, before the show. I always say, "God, good God, that sucked. That was lousy. That was the worst thing I've ever done." And you and Agnes are always so nice, and I keep thinking you're just being nice because you need an extra airtime, an hour airtime to do.
No.
But you know
no.
me, I don't have an ego either. And
Joe, I listen to all the shows on this network, and you know, some make me cry, some make me scream, and some make me laugh. And I got to tell you, you bring so much to the table. But the thing is, I can count on it that hour, somewhere along the way, I'm going to laugh my stupid ass off. And you don't know the value I attach to that, because I worry sometimes. I know what I do with this program, and I wonder if we need a suicide watch around it sometimes, because I get behind this microphone and it's grim and it's death and it's miserable and everything sucks and it's broken and falling apart. And I try to inject a little humor here and there, sometimes it feels like bailing water out of the Titanic with a damn thimble.
Well, the only thing you can do when you think about that is just realize that, you know, and you know me, you listen to me talk. I talk in the greater scheme of human history, not just in terms of, you know, recent history or even American history or even European history. Just the entire greater scheme of things. You know, talking about how small the planet was, all, you know, our whole community, the way humans have lived, is just a very, very small thing, and we have so much to overcome. And it's so hard to do that because for humans, it's very easy to fall into that trap of, you know, me want, me take. You listen to me while me take or you get hurt. And
yeah.
that's basically what it boils down to. And the ones who want the power are much more aggressive about going after it and getting it. And the ones like you and me who would much rather just stay home and enjoy the fruits of life, the ones who want survival to be a relatively easy thing and not something you have to concern yourself about, we have more trouble because we simply don't think along those lines. Well, I'm not interested in trampling over everybody else to get a bunch of money that I don't need. You're not interested in who you can rip off so you can have, you know, a bigger car or a bigger house. We're not like that. But because we're not like that, we operate at a disadvantage. And that's just the hard truth of it.
Yeah, and it is a very hard truth. I don't want a new house. I'd like for the roof not to collapse on the one I've got.
I'd like to have some furniture. I'd like not to sleep on a damn air mattress every night, you know? And I'm not asking for, you know, gold-plated, antique $5,000 chair. I just want, you know, $200 bed from IKEA, for Christ's sake, you know? Or,
yeah.
And IKEA is a cheap place. That's what I love about that. Or, you know, I got a place down the road here. I'll do an entire bedroom set for $500. You know, and I look at that and I think, well, there's a pipe dream.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not getting in my work.
Well, maybe that's our problem, Joe. Maybe that's our problem. It's the fact that we don't want the home in the country and the river of beer flowing over our grandmother's paisley shawl. If we were just a little more ambitious, we'd be willing to go out and run over grandmothers in the street and steal their purses and do all the stuff that, you know, I got a story here, okay? Okay. I got a story here. Headline, Orlando, Florida theme park recreates crucifixion.
Oh, wonderful.
It is, after all, prayer meeting night. Jesus Christ is crucified and resurrected here 6 days a week. Snarling Roman soldiers whip and drag him, and somber audience members watch. Some quietly weep at a pageant bloody and cruel. It is the grand finale at the Holy Land Experience, which at one point was just another theme park in Orlando until it went bust and the people from Trinity Broadcasting took it over. Now, Trinity Broadcasting has more money than God can count. They've got that money because they have no damn scruples, and they sit in front of a TV camera with that woman that makes Tammy Faye Baker, God rest her soul, look like a demure Mademoiselle cover girl, okay? What's her name? Jan Crouch. and her husband, the guy who, yeah, they bought this theme park and they crucified Jesus 6 days a week. On the Sabbath, he gets a rest, I guess. Now, and they did, and like I said, they did that by telling little old ladies on Social Security that they needed their damn Social Security check to do God's work.
And then they discovered that they could do a lot better if they were the ones who helped to write the Social Security check, which is why they got into the politics business.
You got it all figured out, my brother. And the problem is, we're not willing to do that.
No, I'm certainly not willing. You know, maybe I'm willing to go down there with a bag of popcorn and cheer on the Romans.
Yeah, but you're not willing to get behind the microphone and tell somebody that they need to eat cat food so that you can have a bedroom suit.
Oh, and you know, and I'm not willing to do like what Rush Limbaugh does and what Neil Bortz does, and just say anything just to get a rise out of people. I mean, I've said it before, and you're the same way, and everybody on the Head On Network is the same way. When I say something on my show, I'm saying it because I believe it, and I'm standing behind it. I'm not saying it to get a rise out of people. And you know, you may not like it, you may not agree with it, I may be flat wrong, but I'm not saying it for ulterior reasons. I'm just saying it because I believe it.
Right.
You're not going to get that from the right wing because they have to be disingenuous about it because otherwise nobody would support them.
Now, what I'm going to find interesting is the fact that I will probably not get even so much as a thank you email. You know, thanks for entering.
Oh, did they? I wonder if they just took the email and just laughed at it. Well, do we know this guy? No. All right, see you later.
Well, no, I made them acknowledge it because they didn't even send an email acknowledgement. So I wrote to them and said, you know, did you get it? And the guy goes, yes, your entry is under consideration. Thank you for your submission.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Just sent you the bed bug letter.
The bed bug letter?
You never heard that?
No.
There was a famous old train story about a lady who wrote to explain about bed bugs on the train that she was riding. And the train company wrote her a very apologetic letter with some free tickets. But attached to it was a memo, apparently from whoever handles that sort of thing. It says, send this nut job the bed bug letter. You never heard that story? That's a
no.
Classic.
No, I live under a rock, man.
So, yeah, this is like they have a form letter. All right, write up the form letter for the ones we're not going to accept. Who is this guy? Bob Kincaid? Don't know him.
Send him the bed bug letter. God Almighty.
So, yeah, but, you know, it's a good thing that this came out on prayer meeting night because it really was kind of a prayer. I mean, we, you know, both of us...
You don't know, Joe.
We wanted to. We didn't have very high hopes for this because just we know. We know how this stuff works.
Well, last night I had this dream, and we lost out to somebody who was decorating a library with butcher paper paintings.
Yeah, exactly. We lost to Bob.
You don't want it. Yeah.
You know what I was thinking? I was telling Agnes, I was thinking of the Monty Python sketch, The Ministry of Silly Walks, if we remember that. It was a government agency that funded silly walks. And a guy came in and said, yeah, I've developed a silly walk, and I think I'd like to get funding. And so he does it, and he just kind of, you know, does something goofy, and John Cleese is like, well, you know, you're really not doing anything very silly. Yeah, but I think with government funding, I could make it even sillier. And that's, you know, and that's just the kind of thing I'm looking at, you know, people going into the silly walks thing and seeing if they can get some funding or something. I'm Bob. I got a blog. Give me money.
I'm going to go watch YouTube.
Yeah, I'm going to go watch. I got to watch the YouTube because I got to catalog it all. If I catalog everything on YouTube, it's okay. Then we can make use of it somehow.
Okay, I think we've officially verged over into snarky.
Snarky, okay. Well, listen, let me let you go because you got, geez, it's almost the end of the hour here, Bob. You went through a whole hour without any commercials. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. Yeah, it is wonderful. And it's wonderful that I don't, you know, we've got a little bit of a deal with an advertising deal with CityNet, who provides our new phone and internet service. And I love these people to pieces, and I wouldn't say a good word about them unless I honest to God meant it. And I do. These people are fan freaking tastic.
Well, Bob, I know you can trust that I know that you certainly don't hold back. That's for sure.
Yeah, I don't know what it would be like to have to come on the air every day and make sure that I didn't say something bad about Snake Farm Insurance or All Snake Insurance because they were advertising with us.
Right, exactly.
Because, you know, that's the first cross over the Primrose threshold on the road to hell.
I hear you.
Joe, you take care, brother.
Take care, and I will see you guys in the morning.
All righty. Now get back to work.
To work, Bob.
All right. You too. Tote that barge. Lift that bale. That's it. Thanks, everybody. Please forgive me if you think I was being crappy about that. I'm really not. I wish the best of these people. I want progressive change in this country. I just happen to believe that one of the greatest ways we have of bringing it about is by creating real-time talk, dialogue, conversation. Because static writing back and forth, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I just don't get it. But, you know, that's how it is. I mean, I went to one of these blogs. I typed in something very well thought out. Some concern troll or just ass comes back and says, "Oh, were you paid to shill for Hillary like that? Huh? Me? Dumbass? You ever listen to the show and you call..." Oh! So I'm kind of done with that, you know. Because there was no interest in dialogue. There was no interest in discussion. There was no interest in problem solving. There was no interest in bringing to light real problems and concerns and troubles and triumphs and bringing ourselves together that way? None of that! Oh, you must be a paid shill for Hillary. Jesus, Mary and Joseph. And with that, we're done. Coming up next, the best of Strictly Confidential with Peter Godbold. Thank you, Agnes, for producing. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for what you do via the PayPal button. Thank you for what you do when you're sitting there next to your computer speakers and engaging in this dialogue and this discussion and this debate that has a hope of bringing change and building a meaningful future. Thanks to Mark Levine, who made the first 2 hours a real blast, and Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. If you don't enjoy the hell out of this vacation you're about to take, you and me are going to have to go round and round, brother. Because the hardest working man in liberal talk gets a break. I'll tell you henceforward, as of tomorrow, while Ben's on vacation, we will be running the stream. Any screw-ups are mine and mine alone.
Or mine.
No, they're not yours. They'll be mine, Agnes. That's for the next several days. Okay? And, always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
We'll be right back.
This is the Quality News Network. More problems for financial markets. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed below 1,300 for the first time since April. We'll have the latest numbers coming up in our business segment. The death toll is climbing in Iraq following a series of truck bombings aimed at a Kurdish sect. An American military spokesman said the blasts that killed at least 250 and injured more than 300 were an act of ethnic cleansing by al-Qaeda. America's top military commander said he's ready to recommend troop reductions in Iraq. General David Petraeus warned that he's against a quick military withdrawal, but said the U.S. footprint in Iraq will have to be smaller by next summer. Several major news organizations are reporting the Bush administration says it's preparing to label Iran's elite revolutionary guard a global terrorist organization. That designation will allow the government to block the group's assets and essentially cut off the network that funds them. The State Department would not confirm such a plan. The search for six men trapped in a mine collapse in Utah is in its 10th day, and options for rescuers are running out. Mining experts say chances are slim of finding the men alive, but not impossible. Last year in Australia, two men were rescued after 14 days underground when a similar collapse happened. Six Italians with reported mafia ties were shot dead outside a train station in Germany. According to authorities, those killings are part of an ongoing feud. Mattel has now increased its toy recall to 18 million Chinese-made toys. Senator Dick Durbin is leading the call for better regulation overall. He's urging the U.S. to temporarily detain and inspect all shipments of children's products from China. Texas is bracing for Tropical Storm Aaron, which will likely make landfall tomorrow morning. Forecasters say heavy rain, 3 to 8 inches in some areas, will likely cause flooding after an already extremely wet summer. Last night, Hurricane Flossie just grazed the big island of Hawaii as a Category 2 storm, bringing high waves, rain, and powerful winds. Two co-defendants of Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick will enter their pleas on Friday in the illegal dogfighting case. They're